Fade. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, Happy New Year! You just know where this one's going to start, don't you? How can it not? Late last night after the show was over, I received emails from Chris and Sandra alerting me to a little something-something that was going on in the universe. On the one hand, Chris said, "Well, Bob, if you haven't seen the headlines yet, Rush is in the hospital." Now, I don't like to wish ill upon anyone. And see, this is the way it goes if you're talking about Rush. You start out by saying, you know, I don't want to say anything rotten. And then the disjunctive portion of the language kicks in and you go, but! And just as I did, Chris said, now, I don't want to wish ill upon anyone, but with all the bashing that he's been doing on Obama and the Democrats over this health care bill, I'm just curious as to the kind of treatment that he's getting. Oh, wait, that's right. He's a multimillionaire. He doesn't have to worry about quality of care and coverage like you, myself, and so many other Americans. Maybe while he's in the hospital, he can take the time to see all the people in the waiting emergency room waiting to get treated, or the ones that get turned away. Yeah, I understand, Chris. And a Happy New Year to you. And in addition to that, Sandra sent me an email. Slugged the subject line, "Dare to Dream." Bob, what a wonderful way to end the year. Shall we pray? And there it was, all over the series of tubes. You know, it's a series of tubes. It's not a big truck. Somewhere along the way in his Hawaiian vacation, and Joe Vecchio, when I posted it to my Facebook page, asked one of the most trenchant questions, why is Rush vacationing in Hawaii? Why isn't he vacationing in Texas with all the real Americans? Yeah, because after all, I forget which freak it was, but some right-wing freak had criticized President Obama for daring to go on vacation in Hawaii, you know, where he grew up, going home, as it were. Oh, yeah. It was Kevin Madden. Kevin Madden, former Willard Romney spokesman, who said, "Hawaii to many Americans seems like a foreign place." Yeah. Let's just catch the audio real quick. Why not? From CNN, being interviewed by John Roberts.
Here for the AM breakdown, CNN political contributor and Democratic strategist James Carville, along with Republican strategist Kevin Madden. Gentlemen, great to see both of you. Kevin, let's start with you. The president taking heat, as we said, for waiting 3 days before issuing his first comments about the Christmas Day bomber. But if we go back to December of 2001, President Bush waited 6 days before he said anything about shoe bomber Richard Reid. So why all the heat for this president from the Republicans?
Well, I think there's two reasons. First is you have to look at the initial response. George Bush was never accused of being soft on terrorism in the aftermath of September 11th. He was still enjoying a great deal of goodwill from the American public for his rather robust response. If you remember when President Bush went to the Ground Zero site and took a bullhorn, that was a presidential moment that was ingrained in many
people. Oh, time out! His rather robust response? You mean planning a war against Iraq? robust response? You mean calling Richard Clark to the Oval Office and said, Dick, go out there and get me some evidence that showed that Saddam was behind 9/11. And Richard Clark said, Mr. President, all the information points to the idea that it was Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and that the plot originated in Afghanistan. Well, go look some more and don't come back till you find me a connection to the Iraq and the Saddam. Comes back 2 days later. Sir, there's no evidence out there that Saddam had anything to do with 9/11. Well, you're not looking hard enough. Go look some more. I know that Saddam was trying to, was behind 9/11 because he tried to kill my daddy. That robust response. Okay, just say it.
Was mine, so that carried him over for many, many months. And it gave him the political capital that he needed to prosecute his anti-terror policies at the time. President Obama right now has suffered very greatly in the last few months because of the fight and over health care, and he has very little political capital right now. So Republicans feel it's in vogue to criticize his president. And then lastly, I think you also have to remember the fact is the president...
In vogue? Vogue. Criticize Obama. Vogue. What?
Being on vacation in Hawaii, it's much different than being in Texas. Hawaii, to many Americans, seems like a foreign place. I think those images, the optics, hurt President Obama very badly.
For pities. Wait. Hawaii, to many Americans, seems like a foreign place. Which many Americans would that be? The baggers, the birthers, the deathers, the tenthers, the booger eaters? Did they not catch those several years of a police drama called Hawaii 5-0, you know, the 50th state, that it's a state? Marvelline, that Kenyan president, that interloper in our white man house has done gone off to that foreign Hawaii country for vacation again. See, I told you he weren't no Merkin. Poor Marvelline, having to deal with that. The ravings of poor mad birther Emery. All the Marvelines all around the country. Oh, poor darlings. But I guess those are the Americans that Kevin Madden is talking about. The ones who can't read a map. The ones who can't read a list of the states of the Union. Where's Puerto Rico? Ain't Afghanistan a state yet, Marvelline? Oh, Emery, just take your Aricept and shut up. But George Bush was real Merkin. He cut brush and talked to horses. Well, no, he was scared of the horses. But oddly enough, no criticism for Flush Flimbaugh, because he's a multi-millionaire gas bag who babbles away daily when he's not going golfing and, you know, taking, or maybe a little all-boys vacation, and we do mean boys, to the Dominican Republic. No criticism for him. So he was out playing golf. He'd been seen on the Big Island and at Kona. But he was playing golf there at the Wailea Country Club. Our hero, America's truth detector, was. And he experienced chest pains. And the EMS team was summoned because, of course, at $40 million a year, you can have eight heart transplants and, you know, hell, write a check, as my dad used to say. And so all the stuff was all over the place. Yeah, he's in grave condition in Queens Hospital. I thought Queens Hospital was in Queens, but no, it's apparently in Hawaii. And as a consequence, the news went out that Flush was having chest pains. But then I got to thinking about it. Wait a minute. Here's a jiggling wad of tumble guts, with whom the only thing I share in common is a rather sedentary lifestyle. And you know how it is. You're on vacation. Golfers, any golfers in the audience? Romper room portion of the program? Yes, I can see the hands. There are a few golfers. you make the turn after the ninth hole. You pop in the clubhouse. You know how it. Rush is a man of manifest appetites. So you're making the turn. You get done with nine. You're pretty happy with the thing that you put down as a five on a par four that was actually a seven, but you didn't count that one that you kicked out of the weeds. And you stop in the clubhouse and you have, two or three ice-cold 16-ounce pints of beer and chase that down with six or seven of Hawaii's best chili dogs with Spam on the side, extra sauerkraut, a big load of mustard, and maybe a few blasts of hot sauce and some of the island's best hot dog chili. And then you head on out to tee off on the 10th, and you tee off on the 10th, and you put down a 6, even though it was really an 8, but we'll forget about that drop that you took for free after you put one in the lake. And you're okay with that, and you play 11, and you play 12, and you're on 13, and you're in the fairway bunker again, and all of a sudden you just, you're a little short of breath, and my friends, it is hurting right there at my sternum. I am having chest pains. Someone call the ambulance. Dumb bastard had indigestion. Come on, he may not even have had a heart attack. I hate to burst your New Year's Eve bubble, but yeah, it's true. May not even have had a heart attack. You'd have to have a heart to have a heart attack. He's probably got one of those, because he has him on the show every now and then. They're bosom buddies and everything. He's probably got one of those mechanical robotic things in his chest, like what Dick Cheney has. You know, the ones where Dick kind of slumps and, oh, I was dead again. Well, I'm back. But for a while there, we could hope. We could. I even dreamed I was going to wake up and find out that he was dead. Man, I'm vicious. But how vicious am I? How vicious are you? I posted it on my Facebook page, and I think I got more comments out of this posting than I've ever got on any other. And all I said is that if they announce he's croaked, I won't believe he's really, really, really dead till I see his Hawaiian long-form death certificate. And, our buddy Aaron said, sorry, Bob, the best you can hope is a certificate of death, which everybody knows isn't the same thing as a death certificate. Jesus. But it. On the one hand, you think, I'm a better human than to wish that other human ill. And frankly, wishing accomplishes nothing. Wishing is wishing. It doesn't shape the turnings of the universe. It doesn't make even so much as an asteroid wobble on what passes for an axis. It's just that. It's just wishing. Or hoping. Oh, wasn't there a sort of a girl group song back in the day about wishing and a hoping and a hoping and a praying? Where is this stuff when I need it? Bless her heart, my buddy Lane said, please don't let him die. Some conspiracy crap will inevitably develop. Let's just hope he has a near-death experience and God tells him to shut the up. But God couldn't do that because Russia's God is Mammon. And Mammon doesn't say things like that in those sort of... what metaphysical interstitial experiences. So I realize it's very shallow of me. But how long? How long have we gone on? It's more than 20 years that hateful old gas bag, and I think gas bag has been confirmed now, he's probably got a hiatal hernia. He took a little too much of a turn, because he was probably trying to, he was probably on a par five and trying to reach in two. And so he had his he hit his drive, and then he kept his driver out to try to hit it off the turf, trying to get up on the green in two so he'd have a putt for eagle. And he probably whipped it a little too hard and strained a little too hard and swung a little too hard, and something kind of went right around his pyloric valve and his sternum and his solar plexus. And the next thing you know, you get, you know, the news reports we got. So I don't think, if Bill Frist can diagnose Terry Schiavo on a videotape, I can diagnose Flush Limbaugh from the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, can't I? I mean, come on. So my money is betting it wasn't a heart attack. Freaking indigestion. Brought on by virtue of the fact that the man is a horrible, horrible, horrible glutton. Just is. Sorry, answering a query. Oh, yeah, here it is. David from Maine to the rescue. A little song for Rush. Actually, a little song for the rest of us. There it is. Everybody dance.
Wishing and hoping and thinking and praying, planning and dreaming each night of his charms.
Ew.
And show him that you care.
Man, this has parody written all over it, doesn't it? Just not enough time to turn it around. Dusty Springfield, wishing and hoping. I should have known that. What kind of old worn out disc jockey am I anyway? But we've got several dedications for Flush this evening. Yeah, basically what you had is the Fred Sanford equivalent, or the Rush Limbaugh equivalent of Fred Sanford on a really highfalutin golf course they'd never let Fred Sanford onto, somewhere on Oahu going, this is a big one, Elizabeth. And it was gas. Way off the chili dogs, Rush. Because, you know, if he had a real heart condition and he'd be on nitrites, I don't know, one of them treats bacon, the other one treats heart conditions. And he wouldn't be able to take the Viagra, which we all know he has a bit of a penchant for, right? Right, ELO. It was an ass pimple rupture. It was a Vietnam flashback where he's concerned. Indeed. So, you know, I'm sorry. It brought out the worst in me. But by the same token, what am I supposed to do? Say, get well soon, Rush? Or, as was suggested on that same Facebook thread, send him a get well card with a double bacon cheeseburger in it. Oh, my goodness. There's another potential bumper. But we'll leave that alone. So, it is New Year's Eve. And whatever you wish to bring to the table, lighthearted or less so, or deadly in earnest. We've got a fairly broad mix of all of that for the evening. And whatever you care to bring is entirely up to you. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Locally, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Just an update for you, for those of you who have inquired. Margie is home from the oral and maxillofacial surgeons, where she had her 15-year-old wisdom teeth extracted, surgically removed, if you will. She's rather puffy in the cheek and a little bit sore and kind of, you know, from the anesthesia that's wearing off.
She's got a lot of soup to work with and a lot of clear liquids to work with over the next couple of days. But she came through it just fine, and she's doing quite well, and she thanks you very kindly for all your good wishes over the course of the last 24 hours or so. Hell of a way to spend New Year's Eve, though, isn't it? But, it's, you know, she's 15. It's not like she's going to go out and dance the night away and clink champagne glasses and, no. And I have a moral, a bit of a moral quandary as well, and it's entirely up to you what happens with it. I have a video here from the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, as Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, notes, and I am torn as to whether or not to play it, because, man, is this dirty. If I played it, it would be, without a doubt, the dirtiest thing I have ever played on this program. It's dedicated to Rush Limbaugh. It's downright prophetic. And it's nasty. Those of you who follow comedy, you know what the Aristocrats joke is? It's like a Rush Limbaugh version of the Aristocrats joke. And I'm going to leave it up to you whether I play it, because I'm not really comfortable with playing anything that is that overtly, deliberately gross and nasty, because it is. You will all say, yeah, Bob, that sure was. That was the grossest, nastiest thing you've ever played on the program. So it's up to you whether I play it or not. If I do play it, it's going to have to be with the understanding that all of the little Timmy and little Susie and little Cindy and little Bobby all have to leave the room until we're done with this thing, because you really don't want them using any of the words that Bill Hicks uses in this. Okay? Or, I tell you what, let's just make it easy. Go to YouTube. Not right now, but just enjoy. Bill Hicks perfectly describes Rush Limbaugh. Say it again. Bill Hicks perfectly describes Rush Limbaugh. And you know what? Go watch it for yourself later. And you know what? Let me know when you're done laughing. So we'll do that. And we got some Rush Limbaugh dedications, music dedications for the evening coming along. Right now, however, we're going to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Maura.
Hey, Maura. How are you?
Very good. Happy New Year.
Thank you, and the same to you.
I was calling because I caught something online from Digby.
Yes.
Who was reading Politico, one of the blogs, about Limbaugh. And very interesting. It says, KITV now reports that Limbaugh was sitting in a chair in his ninth-floor hotel room at the Koala Hotel and Resort when paramedics arrived. KITV reported that sources said Limbaugh told emergency crews that he was having chest pains and had been taking medication for back problems.
Oh, dear.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, what kind of medication do you take for back problems?
Gee, painkillers?
Muscle relaxers?
Possible.
Yeah, and they're both downers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, bless my soul.
It took every bit of my Christian upbringing not to wish him ill today.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It really does put a challenge to it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there's that little part, that little evil seed in all of us, more that, and your little dog, too, or in his case, the cat that he shares a 24,000-square-foot mansion with, but it's the same principle.
Poor cat.
Oh, I know. You'd think the ASPCA would get involved.
Well, I'm glad to hear your daughter's doing well.
She is. And you know what? I was really proud of her, Maura. She marched right into the dental surgeon's office. No, daddy, please don't. No, please, Mr. Custer. Just faced right up to it. And as they were walking her out for us to take her home this evening, the nurse looked up and said, you know, she's a very social child. And her mother and I looked at each other and went, imagine that.
That's wonderful. You should be very, very proud of her.
And she had two ice packs held, because she had all four done today, Maura.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she had two ice packs and was holding them up against either side of her face, kind of Macaulay Culkin-esque from Home Alone,
right.
You know, with the, ah! But, you know, I was really, really proud of how well she handled it.
That's wonderful. Well, I hope she heals quickly and doesn't have too much pain.
I do, too, but she'll probably be miserable for a day or so. But they tell her that she's good to go and go back to school on Monday when school starts back up here in Fayette County. She can go back.
She doesn't even get a day off out of it.
No. I mean, I personally got to thinking about it. And I think, you know, what kind of a father am I that schedules her wisdom tooth job on New Year's Eve? Somebody, I need a good talking to, Maura.
I think so, Bob. Definitely. Listen, I just want to wish you and the whole Horms family a very, very happy New Year.
And the very same
very
to you.
Special.
And you
have
as
a good 2010.
All right, it'll be good as long as you're participating and staying involved with the conversation.
You know I'll be there, Bob.
All right, take care, Maura.
Right now.
Okay,
bye
bye. Maura calling from New Jersey, and I will go to the. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second, but an email rolling in from Critic at Large Reverbo. Once again, proof that there is no God. Here we have a strong candidate moving to the top of the smiting list, and God is nowhere to be found, you tell me. Well, you know, last night, Reverbo and I were talking about this, and I said it's too much, God's paying too much attention to football and you know, soccer goalies and you know, soccer midfielders and stuff. And then I got to thinking, don't forget, I mean, you want to talk about putting a job on God, don't forget about, you know, the shortstop who pulls up to the plate, coming to bat, bottom of the ninth, two out. The base is loaded, down by four, needs a home run to tie, and he stands. And this is a shortstop who's batting, you know, 196, and he's crossing himself, and God's going, you know, I was going to solve the starving over here, but I got to work on your home run, 196 batter. What do you think I am? Then I think, Reverbo's on to it. Here we have a strong candidate moving to the top of the smiting list, and God is nowhere to be found. You tell me. And by the way, in the course of a conversation with David from Tennessee about Limbaugh and his so-called heart incident, and this plays in perfectly. I hadn't seen the thing that Maura had seen about him admitting to being on, you know. Wait a minute. He was on the golf course and he's taking back pain pills? I'm thinking these ain't Dones. Remember Dones pills? And what David said is, I went to bed laughing. Flush goes on vacation and spins one too many pool boy after one too many Viagras after one too many Mai Tais. And yeah, way too funny. And then he added, by the way, don't know if you noticed, but Flush does that conservative bouncy speech. Remember, this would be back in January when Nick Regalado and I were humping all over our equipment all over the Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference in D.C. there in what district is it? Can't remember. But at the same time, there was some sort of conservative fest, or maybe it was up in March. I can't remember. But anyway, Flush Flimball shows up and does a reprise of the "I hope he fails" speech, and he's wearing this black shirt, and he is, honest to God, bouncing around, jiggling like Jabba the Hutt. And that's what David's referring to. Dirty-minded listeners. No, that's not what I was talking about. I said humping equipment all. Oh, jeez. What am I going to do with you people? Can't leave you alone for a minute. But anyway, as David was saying, he said, Flush does that conservative bouncy speech, and immediately goes on a crash diet. I will always contend, says David, he was pilled up to the max. Fine, he loses maybe 40-plus pounds. Well, that was August. He's already put a lot of it back on. And then this observation. Older people cannot yo-yo their weight without consequence. And then there's his likely diversions, shall we say. Oopsie. Him have little heart alert in the islands, man. And lo and behold, this is such a beautiful thing. Lo and behold, Mora breaks this one. That he was sitting in a chair in his ninth floor hotel suite, and he informed the paramedics that he'd been on some pain medication for his back. Uh-oh. You know, I mean, I'm no kidding. I'm not a good golfer, but I've played a lot of golf in my years, more so years ago. Well, I haven't played golf in probably 4 years. Used to enjoy the heck out of it. Just got a little too expensive. Who am I kidding? It got prohibitively expensive. But you know what? You can turn the wrong way swinging that nasty little Scottish stick, and you're in, in baseball, pitching a baseball from the mound, the pitcher's motion is the most unnatural thing you can do to a human arm. And the most unnatural thing you can do to a human spinal column is swing a golf club. And you just swing the wrong way once, and you got problems. And if you've already got that problem, I mean, golfers and the others, remember Fred Couples? You know, brilliant golfer, started and then developed back problems and just about ruined himself. And if you go all the way back to the genesis of Flush Flemball's addiction revelation, he said that he got it. He said that he got his addiction when he hurt his back playing golf, and yet was out there constantly playing golf anyway. Doesn't make any sense at all. And so there he is in Hawaii, playing golf and eating pills. Uh-oh, Rush. Could it be that you have fallen off your $40 million wagon? No, not possible. Couldn't possibly be. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
You know, it's unfortunate that Rush, you know, didn't, I mean, granted, it is mean and evil and sneaky for us to do it, but, you know, it takes a superior person to not wanting to see him die. You know, when you get down to it, I guess.
I know, and I'm not up around that Dalai Lamaville that you got to be to do that.
Yeah, I'm not She-Ra either. I can't do it.
Oh, nice, nice ref.
Yeah.
She-Ra. Woo! Garrett.
Yeah, there is actually an episode of She-Ra that had that. The whole plot of it is that Skeletor feeds Hordak, the series' main villain, this thing called a Doom Berry Pie, which by the end of the episode, if he does not find somebody that will shed a tear for him out of actual sorrow, he will die. The whole episode has She-Ra carting the Hordak, who is whining and pathetic and, you know, feeling like crap anyway, carting him halfway across the planet to try and find somebody. Nobody and the entire planet of Etheria will shed a tear for this pathetic, evil dictator. So She-Ra breaks down and cries, saving his life. Because he is so pathetic, and he's wasted his life so badly. And that's the first thing that came to mind when you said that, oh, it's just heartburn.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, anyway, besides that, this decade has sucked so bad that we just could not get something that good to finish it off with.
Yeah, it's too much to hope for. You know, plus the fact that, and, you know, mathematics has always been a challenge to me, but having been enlightened, I'm going to remain true to the mathematical facts involved. This decade ain't ending tonight. This decade ends a year from tonight.
Nobody likes the math geek, Scully.
Oh, I know. You're just full of them tonight, aren't you? But it's true. I mean, how many? Anybody? Who starts counting with zero unless you're working a number line and it's algebra?
Although, you know, if the Yankees don't win the World Championship next year, I might have to use that, you know, just, you know, just because, you know, I can't deal with the fact that they won as many World Series this decade as the Red Sox.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I might have to do that, to do that if the Yankees don't win it all next year. Of course, they're trying to buy another one, but, you know. But, yeah, I try.
You're going to get me in trouble with all the Yankees fans, aren't you? That's what you're trying to do tonight. I can tell.
Possibly.
I know what a Red Sox fan sounds like. Don't you kid me.
Yeah, but they should know by now. I've made reference to it, to my opinions on the matter, so it's all on me.
Nah, it's never all on you. I'm responsible for, you know, for pushing the button that brings you on the air, Garrett.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, yeah, it's just... I tried to think of things good to end the day. You know, what good has come? It's a very short list. It begins with the fact that we got over our racism and elected a black president.
Well, some of us did. 23% of West Virginia Democrats didn't, but I understand your sentiment.
As a whole, you know, we at least... Most of us got over our racism just long enough to elect a black man president, which, if not before February when Guy played that full speech on race there from Obama, I would not have believed you. Because before that point, I just thought you'd be crazy if you told me, oh, you're going to be president. Because, once you get past that, it's grasping at straws. It boils down to grasping at straws.
Hey, you wanna enjoy a real first class piece of bad journalism?
Oh, do tell.
This is a write up from the Detroit Business Development Examiner.
Oh God, that sounds bad already.
Yeah, I know, and the author is one Rick Weaver, who just looks like a ditto head in his little picture. One of America's most successful entrepreneurs, Rush Limbaugh, was admitted to Queens Medical Center in Honolulu complaining of chest pains. So, some reports say it may have been a heart attack, but whatever afflicted Limbaugh, he has remained in control of his broadcast, publishing, and merchandising empire. You know, Jesus, this isn't even 12 hours after...
That sounds like the last two paragraphs of the current AP story. Or actually, the last four paragraphs of the current AP story on him.
Well, and here's the journalism fun.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Just work with me here. This is the kind of paragraph that my father used to stop, used to read silently, and then look over to my mother and say, "Hey, Margaret, listen to this."
Uh-oh.
Limbaugh has remained in contact with his empire, recognizing the importance of customer service and business leadership. What? He has already reassured his listening public of his condition, saying he is resting comfortably after suffering chest pains on his website. Really? He suffered chest pains on his website? That's what it says! He goes on to relate to the conservative fibers of his listeners. Would that be cotton, Dacron polyester, Fortrel, rayon? I don't know. He goes on to relate to the conservative fibers of his listeners, asking for their prayers and well wishes.
I know what it means. He's talking about, Bob. It's all the fiber that they get from ingesting all the crap that Rush spits out to them all day.
Yeah, it oat brand, but not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I love some of the stuff that's just out there, Garrett. I mean, my God in heaven. Here's a diary from over at Daily Coast titled, Rush Limbaugh's heart attack. Word is leaking out that Rush Limbaugh's heart attack is a staged media event. It all comes down to him wanting more cash for his ad rates. The ad rates for 2010 are set by the highest 3 days in December. Turns out Rush was furious when he found out this year's high dates. Respected journalist Brett Meisner broke the story. Rush apparently turned to his staff and said, "Watch this. and turned a scheduled routine trip to the hospital to have two minor procedures, including a hearing check, into a media event after he told an operator he was having chest discomfort. They snuck Limbaugh out of the hospital after making sure word got out, and so it began.
Yeah, that would certainly explain it, because, I mean, it's just like the Texas Tech football coach getting fired right before that line, just right before the line where they'd have to, that the money would be a factor.
This is, this may very well be the I don't know, this is the Rush Limbaugh version of Balloon Boy? Because forgive me, Garrett, but when I first saw the story, I thought, something stinks.
Yeah.
And so that's when I opted for the, you know, six hot dogs with extra chili, you know, at the turn at the Wailea Clubhouse. But I never dreamed it could be something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of us were just hoping that, could it be? Could we be so lucky? I mean, because, you know, the biggest part of the suck of this past decade has been all of the legitimately decent, you know, creative and intelligent, otherwise intelligent individuals who have died. I mean, just this year has been a bad year, but you taken it to affect the rest of the decade. I mean, way too many good people have died, and that is still alive and well.
I know. And even more fun rolling out. I love this quote, too. Queens Medical Center said, "He is being treated today, continues to rest comfortably, and remains in good spirits. Mr. Limbaugh appreciates the prayers and well wishes of his many fans and supporters." But his guest host was Walter E. Williams, and he described it as Limbaugh's pains as similar to the feeling of a heart attack coming on. Now, if the guy's never had one, how does he know?
Yeah, that is a good question. I did think about that for a second when I read the newest version of the AP article. I'm like, huh? How would he know? Unless, I mean, you know, it's amazing that the man has a heart. Okay, so he's obviously, you know, the truth happens when you're scrambling to find a cover story. You know, it just has a way of sneaking out when you're covering your rear end, don't it?
Well, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, he's due back on Monday the 4th. We shall see what we shall see.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like David's theory, too, that the guy is, you know, back on the junk, you know, as confirmed by the Politico story that Maura just mentioned. And I'm kind of hoping that Maura will send me that link if she can find it again.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, and that's another thing that comes, you know, that if somebody that has an history of that, the reactions are usually pretty swift and not too surprising. Like Steve read recently, you know, this more celebrity garbage, excuse me, but the Steven Tyler Aerosmith, he's completely whacked out of his head. And the other four members of Aerosmith are like, screw this, we're dumping this chump.
Wait, Steven Tyler got back on the stuff?
Well, he had a knee surgery a couple of years back, and he got hooked on the painkiller.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's not back to snorting the entire gross national product of Columbia again.
No, but the fact is that he's found a new drug, and which, you know, and that's the, and it's made him thoroughly unbearable again. And it's not surprising, because there are people that shouldn't be allowed to have drugs. And two of them are with Aerosmith currently. And one of them is definitely named Steven Tyler.
Now, see, if you just follow the, If you just follow the Rolling Stones school of things and never you know, just fall out of coconut palms and things like that and get up and say, no problem. And it's much easier that way.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, you know, I guess that, you know, all of the Stones managed to not be complete in total just not cross the line when they were whacked out of their heads.
Wait. Are we talking about the same band?
I mean, or at least want to kill each other. I mean, sure they were. I guess how I word it is that the five members.
I mean, we are talking about the band that's got Keith Richards in it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but they never did break up, I guess, is what I'm getting to. They never got to
Well, they were smart. I mean, they were smart lads, and they realized that there was a hell of a lot of money in it.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, with Aerosmith, they reached the point where, screw the money, I'm out of here. I mean, that's what my point is. They never reached that point where they turned down the money to get away from the jerk. That was on the smack. So, you know, that's my point, I guess.
But, you know, I'm sitting here looking at a Google search, and I'm seeing similar to a heart attack, similar to a heart attack, similar to a heart attack, similar to about 8 or 9 instances of it, and it's the same phrase. And I realize how things can go viral on the Internet, but that similar to business.
Well, it's the story. I mean, granted, the one from that Weaver tool is, you know, completely, you know, Rush, let me kiss your butt, you know, just in, you know, so that I like you. And
you know, yeah, mega dittos from Busted Knuckle.
Yeah, you know, the ones that are gonna, you know, kiss his butt. They're the ones that are gonna see through the crap and do a little bit of reporting, say, ooh, so there might be a reason why he pulled this stunt, this happened, and it's a stunt. And then, of course, the core fact of it is that the details we know come straight from what amounts to be a PR release. And that's the AP version of story.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what it boils down to. It's like, that's the... And it's kind of sad that the AP version of the story is right in the middle of the perception of reality.
Well, that's very true.
Because it kisses his butt for the last 4 paragraphs of the story.
That's about the size of it. Just,
and that's kind of a...
Well, it's the difference between journalism and stenography. And I guess it was Andrew Sullivan who busted, what's his name, over at Politico... for being the stenographer to Dick Cheney with
yeah.
that whole sleazy bit of business that Cheney brought out, criticizing President Obama. Somebody just stuff a tennis ball in his mouth and duct tape it shut for a while. I mean, God almighty. And it's another one of those questions, of course, Garrett, you know, why is anyone listening to that idiot? I mean, we're talking about, I mean, where Dick Cheney's concerned, we're talking about a guy who effed up everything he ever touched. And this guy's got some level of expertise? Pardon? What?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, if, you know, because now that the administration is over, we basically dropped the entire pretense that Cheney was the vice president because, look at it, he's the one making the political statements. Bush is off there goofing off, going to every Dallas Cowboys home game and pretty much any event in that disgustingly overpriced, you know, palace there of Jerry Jones's, and, you know, and doing speeches where even the people that go there say, well, Terry Bradshaw was funnier, you know, and it's obvious that he's the one, he's asserting himself as the guy in charge because he's the one commenting on it, and no, that's the one positive of it, when you get down to it.
One, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Hey, Garrett, good to hear from you, brother. And any plans for the later in the evening, or are you going to stay home and stay away from the amateurs tonight? My God, where you are, the amateurs must be out in force.
I did the strip thing once with my brother the year before he graduated and went into the Marines. I hated it. I hated it. Not coincidentally, it was also the first evening where I heard her saw a video by the Spice Girls. So, you know, and that was like the, when I knew it was the worst evening of my life. That, you know, So that'll give you my opinion of going anywhere near the Strip.
So you're quietly New Year's Eving at home then.
Yes.
You know, I think about Vegas, and Netroots Nation is out there next July, and of course late July in Vegas. You know, that'll be warm.
That's an understatement.
But I'm looking forward to being there. I have no particular interest in Vegas qua Vegas. No offense, but. You know, I've never been, you know, I buy my stupid little lottery ticket, and that's the extent of my gambling problem. I don't know, but it'll be fun to be there. It's going to be, the drive alone will be a blast.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just wondering how long it will take to get from the hills and hollers of West Virginia via vehicle all the way to Vegas.
Well, let's see. When my, this is, you know, this was in the dead of flipping weather and winter and what have you, but it took my family 5 days to drive from Vermont to Vegas in 1990 when we moved out here.
Wow.
And in the first day, we smacked right in the middle of the nor'easter in northern New York.
Okay, well, so I'll shave a couple of days off of that then.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, you do see some, definitely the scenery gets nice once you get, in the middle there. I mean,
Well, the fun part for me is going to be getting west of the Mississippi and all of that stuff. And see, look, it's not even January 1st yet. I'm already thinking about Netroots Nation again. It's going to be exciting, and it's going to be we're going to do it even bigger than we did last year. So, cross our fingers. Garrett, take care, and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too, Bob.
All right, see ya.
See ya.
Bye now. And onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Akimashu Manitoba Zamas, Bob Sob.
Tim?
Yes.
there are very few people who call me with greetings in Japanese, so I kind of guessed it was you.
Oh my gosh, I'm finally on with you. First time caller, long time listener.
Yeah, well, I know. This is wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah, when I first heard your voice, I'm like, wow, he has a great voice. Wow, that's superb. You do have a good voice, by the way.
No, thank you. I don't take care of it very well, though. I've been getting kind of gravelly lately.
but on to my topic. I was, like, so ecstatic when I heard what happened. I mean, there were some people who said, you shouldn't be saying stuff like, I wish Rush dies, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, okay. But I kept going on. And I went to a bunch of, like, right-wing websites, and I used, like, conservative Christian as my screen name or something, because I go to, like, Melanator and use fake names. And I walked in as a right-winger, and I said, Rush should die. He is an evil person. He takes drugs. Oh, my gosh. And
did the little wingnut monkeys just flap out of their cave at you, Tim?
No, actually, because I would say, I would quote comments that he made. I would use my journalism skills and to, counter what Rush was saying. I mean, that's what I do. So people wouldn't say anything. Oh, they would say like, oh, that's not nice. But I would write back and said, well, he said that. They should execute or imprison all the drug users and drug dealers. So, And I said, I wish he dies because he's insulting the Republican Party or the Conservative Party or the Christian, movement. I hope he dies. Jesus takes him away and sends him to hell. He's an evil person.
Well, I mean, no, he's a Christian. Why wouldn't he want to die and go to heaven and be with Jesus? That's the thing I never understand with this crowd. They claim that they're going to go straight up, streets of gold, pearly gates, the works. Well, why wouldn't you be in a hurry if you believe in something like that? But if you want the flip side of that coin, though, Tim, Maura did, in fact, send me the Politico story about his hospitalization that mentions the fact that, and I love this, sources said Limbaugh told emergency crews that he was having chest pains and had been taking medication for back trouble.
Right.
Hmm. It's right. You know, I'm reading it right off the page right now. As of, I guess, 9:49 p.m. last night. But the reader comments, all 684 of them are what's precious. Get well soon, Rush. Praying for you, Rush. May you recuperate soon. Get well quick, Rush. We need you. Ditto. Dear Rush, we need and love you. Please get well soon. All the best. As if Rush is it. Mr. Snerdly, get me over to the Politico website. I have to read what people are wishing me well on.
Oh, my God.
We are praying for you, Rush. You are deeply loved, and we are going to be relentless like you are when it comes to praying for your health.
Rush, get better, brother. You're, Y-O-U-R, the strongest conservative voice of all time, and we need you back on the battle lines. These sickening right-wing morons cannot resist the urge to go into the eliminationist mode. It's a battle, it's a war for conservative values.
Exactly. You know, I saw this one joke though on a conservative website. I guess someone must have hacked it or something. But this person asked, "Why did Rush have a heart attack?" And then the answer, you thought, you know, I guess it was a joke, and it said, because you saw Barack Obama's birth certificate.
Ooh, yeah, see, that's the first place I went. There had to be a birth certificate tie-in. Yeah, I think the entire Hawaii trip was nothing but a big cover for him to try to get into, the hospital and get a look at that Kenyan birth certificate.
But at the same time, Obama and his family were there, and so was Nancy Pelosi at the same time.
Yeah. And
I wonder if he kind of harassed him, though.
You don't know. You just don't know. And, I mean, but you know, as far as being a birther, you know, he said some really sleazy stuff. I love this particular line. Where is it? Trying to find it here. He said that overnight, the hospital in the entire state of Hawaii was transformed into Kenya and then transformed back into Hawaii the very next day. Yeah, there it is. Hawaii morphed into Kenya one day in 1961 and reverted back to Hawaii the next day. Sick bastard. Well, but, you know, taking those pills will do that to your brain, so.
Yeah, no. Jeez. I thought he was arrested. I thought one of the conditions was that he wasn't supposed to take any drugs after his conviction. Well, actually, his near conviction back in Florida, or in Florida. So he admitted that he's taking drugs again. He's breaking his probation, right? Or is he off of his probation?
Is he on? But he doesn't have any of that hanging over his head anymore, does he?
I don't know. But they could still charge. I wonder if they could charge him again, though.
No, that would be double jeopardy. Unless they caught him doctor shopping again.
Ooh. Ooh. They said he has back pain. And there's this website that I put in the room. I think, you know, Fox and Friends were talking about it, but I didn't see it, though. But they were talking about, yeah, he was taking, I guess he was talking to the medics that he was taking, you know, prescriptions for back pain.
Doesn't that send up red flags? I mean, come on, it's got to be more than us that sends up red flags for.
Hmm.
Back pain? I mean, realistically, what all's out there for back pain? I mean, maybe he's taking, okay, ibuprofen, naproxen sodium. Muscle relaxers like Flexeril. But, well, you know.
Or acupuncture. I doubt if he's going to be taking acupuncture, though.
Oh, no, no, no. No. He was chewing up the oxys for the refreshing burst of flavor. He didn't even, no. He's not a needle guy.
No. Oh, my God.
Well, are you all set? Are you all set for this evening? Is it quiet in the City of Angels tonight?
So far, I mean, we're waiting. I'm probably going to hear some gunshots tonight, or whatever.
Really? Just like here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia?
Yeah.
They go out and do the Baghdad fireworks in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is they don't shoot upwards or outwards. I mean, they don't shoot out, you know, downwards or outwards. They shoot upwards.
Right, and let gravity just do its trick.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, Tim, awful good talking to you, and I hope you do have yourself a good new year.
Thank you, and may you, your family, and everyone in the chat room, and everyone else listening to Horn have a great 2010.
Well, thank you very kindly, and you as well. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Hi, arigato gozaimashita, and bye-bye.
Sayonara.
Sayonara.
Bye now. Sorry, my Japanese is severely limited. I know sayonara, Ohio, kanadesuka. I know that because of an old commercial on TV, but it goes no further than that. I always wanted to study it, though, just to read the poetry. So we've gotten through the first hour of the program this evening, this New Year's Eve edition of The Horn, and your thoughts, as always, are more than welcome. We've got the Green News Report. This is a Thursday, you know. The Green News Report on its way from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And leading up to that, a little dedication for old Rush. A little something from Queen, provided by our one of our many music consultants, in this case, ELO, Sue. So this is for you, Rush. You know, mega dittos from the hills and hollers.
Do you know? Do you know just how I feel? Do you know? Do you know? Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, December 31, New Year's Eve, 2009.
It's that time for the top environmental stories of the year and even the decade. Plus, who's the biggest eco-villain of the decade?
Yeah, who is the biggest eco-villain of the decade? All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of year-ending, decade-ending green news, politics, and snarky comment.
What dire economic consequences?
Rising sea levels could flood Mumbai, Manila, Washington, D.C., even New York. Remember, this studio is only 2 blocks from the water.
And only 4 blocks from the Hustler Club. Oh, my God.
Oh, great. I was going to the Hustler Club for New Year's Eve. This is your Green News Report.
It's just another New Year's Eve. It's just another old lang syne. But when we're through this new year, you'll see we'll be just fine.
Well, happy New Year's Eve to you, Des.
Happy New Year's to you, too.
So, round up the year and the decade for us in 6 minutes, will you?
No, I'm going to try. It's New Year's Eve, and a good time to look back at a few of the biggest stories of the past year and the decade as well. And yes, I know, technically, it's not the end of the decade, but seriously, who cares?
Well, thanks, because the end of the decade is actually at the end of next year, when we'll do this whole report again. But
okay.
Never mind that. Press on.
Arguably the most important green story of the year, the United Nations Climate Summit in Copenhagen. Even without reaching a legally binding agreement to cut global emissions, an accord was reached that for the first time ever includes China and India. China agreed to outside verification, and developing countries will receive billions in financial aid to help preserve their forests and transition to a low-carbon economy.
So even with what some call a failure in the Copenhagen conference, there were some successes, and it does give us a framework from which to move on, correct?
Yes, and it's far better than what we would have come out with otherwise, which would have been nothing.
Nothing.
Even as the field data from the Earth itself began to show the changes climate scientists warned us about over this last decade. Another top story this year, the resurgence of climate change denial. Like ClimateGate, where stolen emails from scientists didn't overturn climate science and didn't show any falsification of data, but ironically managed to focus the public attention on the issue of global warming.
Yeah, and that's an interesting story, because over the last year or two, prior to this phony story about these stolen emails, even the Republicans seemed to be coming on board with global warming issues. John McCain made it a part of his platform last year. And that all quickly fell apart as soon as these knuckleheads found something new to lie about.
Well,
frankly.
Also, we saw the phenomenon of fake AstroTurf groups pretending to be nonprofits, but really funded by corporations to advance corporate interests. There were many other big stories over the whole decade, like the massive heat wave in Europe in 2003 that killed over 30,000 people, the breakup of ice sheets in Antarctica, China racing past the U.S. to become the world's biggest emitter. And, of course, there were some positive stories out of this decade, the introduction of hybrid cars. Finally, the issues of climate change and sustainability finally gaining widespread public attention. But in reality, our list for the top stories of the decade turned out to be actually quite simple, because most of the big events of the environment could be summed up under one big headline, the election of George W. Bush. Back in 2000, the Arctic still had ice in summer. The massive ice sheets of the Antarctic were still intact. New Orleans hadn't seen a hurricane in years, and federal agencies were still protecting Americans' air, water, health, and public lands. Although Bush promised during the 2000 presidential campaign to reduce CO2 emissions, once in office, he pulled the plug on the Kyoto Treaty.
He was just kidding about that. You believed him?
And then the Bush administration went to work in earnest, undoing decades of environmental progress. Relaxation and deregulation of clean air and water laws, deregulation of energy markets, Enron and the California energy crisis, starving infrastructure of funds for maintenance that led to the drowning of New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina and the great blackout in the Northeast in 2003, two wars and record high oil prices, and of course, outright denial and obfuscation of climate science that led to 8 years of inaction on what scientists say is only the biggest existential threat facing humanity. So, with all that, it shouldn't be a surprise that when The Guardian polled its readers for the biggest environmental villain of the decade, guess who won by a huge margin?
Me?
No, George W. Bush.
Oh, good.
But there is one story that makes our list for both the top story of the year and the decade. The Obama administration, which over the last year has begun the slow process of reversing the destructive policies of the Bush administration. Although the Obama administration's record is undeniably mixed, it's also an undeniably positive trend for the environment.
Slow indeed, but like turning around the Titanic, at least it's turning around. And for that, we've got to give the Obama administration and the EPA and their chief, Lisa Jackson, some credit. Read about that and the rest of our top green news stories of the year and the decade at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us next year as well on Twitter, download us on iTunes, and have a happy and safe New Year's. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your end of the year and the decade for some folks. Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
A little less than 5 hours before the midnight hour here in the Eastern time zone, a little less than 4 in Central, a little less than six in Central, 7 in Mountain, 8 out on the Pacific Coast. See, I can be taught. I can do my ciphering as long as I, as long as I'm really, really focused in and thinking about it. Otherwise, I'm a little slow. Email in from Ron in Raleigh. I love this. You guys just, you know, we connect and the images just sort of snowball. I made mention of the idea that this was all a subterfuge because if Rush is out to find the long-form Hawaiian birth certificate, I don't know, maybe with the official seal of King Kamehameha on it for all, yeah. With the birthers and the baggers and the deathers and the denthers, who knows what you get. But, yeah, so Ron and Raleigh picked that ball up and started running with it. Bob, the vision of Rush in a ninja outfit. And this would have to be like the Chris Farley Hollywood ninja, Beverly Hills ninja. That's what it was, Beverly Hills ninja. This would have to be the Chris Farley Beverly Hills ninja outfit. Bob, the vision of Rush in a ninja outfit skulking about the hospital records office with the Mission Impossible theme playing in the background comes to mind.
The heart attack was just a ploy to get him in the door. "I've got to find that long-form birth certificate and destroy it, my friends," says Ron. "I'm just saying." "Yeah, I know. I'm just agreeing. I'm just thinking. Yeah, I hear things." Oh, God, you guys. You guys. Never a dull moment on this program. And you know what? There's a reason people take vacation this time of year. Because it gets really not newsy, and you gotta go scrounging, as the phrase has it, to pull together 3 hours of radio. And then on top of that, you add in the undie bomber, who is, after all, an underwearerist. The undie bomber, and that story has literally sucked all the oxygen out of the newsroom. There is absolutely nothing else going. And, you know, you would think at first, well, at least it's a real news story, but it ain't. The real news story happened a week ago. Everything since then has been this sort of pseudo-journalistic kerfuffle. Love that word. Kerfuffle over, you know, who said what and why and when. And, of course, the wingnuts are out there screaming that they want to see Janet Napolitano stripped naked and whipped in the village square and then burnt and have her drawn and quartered in her various parts, buried in, you know, liberal parts of the country, you know, in liberal states. All for saying that the system worked. Which she said, but, oh, I'm not going to try it. But that's what it's been all about. And then the profiling business. Now, an aside, you know, I mentioned last night in talking with Jude that I can hardly stand to listen to terrestrial radio anymore. And I listened to a little bit of it yesterday because I had to be over in Beckley, 2 days in a row in Beckley. And that's a real gasoline crippler for this little family. But I had to be over in Beckley yesterday, so I'm listening to the right-wing blatherskate. That's a fun word. Keep that one handy. And he's talking to some guy who is, you can just tell he's a wingnut, and he's just testing the waters to see how bagger, how birther, how deather, how tenther, how booger-eater he can get. And, of course, when you're dealing with the right wing nut in Beckley, there is absolutely, the sky is the limit in when it comes to wing nuttery. And eventually he says it, "Steve, what we need here is profiling. We got to have us some profiling because I ain't seen no 80-year-old grandmas blowing up no airliners." But through the course of all this was, you know, my sister called me. She was flying back from Florida, and she had this Muslim in line with her. And repeatedly, he uses the phrase Muslim, a Muslim, a Muslim. And I'm sitting, and it's part of the reason I had to turn the garbage off. Because how in heaven's name can these wingnuts, I mean, do they have some special gene that allows them to detect the mere presence of a follower of the prophecies of Muhammad? Well, then the floodgates opened. Steve, what we gotta have is we gotta be profiling. Ain't no airliner ever been blowed up by no 80-year-old white grandma. What we gotta have here is some profiling of these Muslims. Well, it seemed to me that if you can tell that they're Muslims right off the bat, you've already done the profiling, and anything else is superfluous. But barring that, there's the issue of, how do you know they're Muslims? And what I'm trying to convey here is the absolute paucity of thought process inside the noggin of a birther, bagger, deather, tenther, booger eater. Muslims. It has never dawned on this clown
that there are blonde-haired, blue-eyed Muslims. That there are Asian Muslims. That there are Latino Muslims. That there are Anglo-Muslims.
Kent Stevens?
No, no, no. They're all Muslims. And he can spot them. No, he can't.
What he was trying to say, and the real bigotry and racism that he was trying to manifest, was that he wants all Arabic-looking people profiled. Or all Semitic-looking people profiled. Or perhaps we could use a different phrase, Levantine peoples profiled and pulled out of the line in a full cavity search and, you know, make sure that their underwear's on right and that they don't have, that they haven't replaced their toe jam with plastic explosives and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It boils down to racism and bigotry. Because I'm sure it would come as a great shock to this clown that I heard yesterday if you pointed out to him that if that's the case and that's the profiling he wants to do, that if Jesus, magic Jesus, was suddenly to reappear in an airport terminal somewhere in Mecca, we'd have to profile him too. Because as compared to the Apollonian apparition of him as created by the ancient Greeks who co-opted the Jesus movement, and then sort of plastered Jesus onto old portraits of Apollo and plastered his daddy onto old portraits of Olympian Zeus. The fact of the matter is Jesus was probably about five feet 2 inches tall. And he had kinky, curly, black hair and dark brown almond-shaped eyes. Odds are a broad nose and a somewhat prognathic mouth and skin the color of brick, just like everybody else who lived over there at the time. And that's who this guy wants to profile. And in this racism and in this bigotry, that's where you get the clownish hatred of sick bastards like Dick Cheney. And Hoekstra and Peter King
asked Tuesday about how Obama's response differed from Bush's. Peter King said it was his recollection that senior Bush administration officials such as Attorney General John Crisco Man Ashcroft did speak about Reid's case, you remember the shoe bomber, soon after he was arrested. However, Politico could not locate any public comment from Ashcroft before he held a press conference when Reid was indicted nearly a month later. Bless his heart, Representative Eric Massa, a Democrat from New York, absolutely let go on the freak Cheney. He said, this guy, don't get on, Representative Massa, do not get on any small aircraft. The apparent leaders of the Al-Qaeda cell in Yemen were two terrorists who were released by Vice President Cheney in secret. Oopsie. And the recently divorced Kinkmeister, Karl Rove, lit in to the Obama administration. Peter Hoekstra, Republican of Michigan, running for governor, has tried to fundraise on this so-called terrorist plot. And then the Goonie clowns on Fox News. Well, they did what the gooberhead did on the radio yesterday in Beckley. They want their Muslims profiled. Dang it.
nation.
I haven't heard a single person talking about any kind of racial profiling. It doesn't say Muslim
what they're talking
on
about
your Fort
Hood. Right.
I mean,
Fort Hood, it is about racial profiling.
When,
it's about Muslim
red
profiling.
Flags raised. I mean, at Fort Hood,
yeah,
that guy had a lot of red flags.
Information.
But anybody who travels all the time recognizes how ludicrous it is to frisk your grandmother. She's not the risk. But somebody, let's say, who's been in Yemen in the past year, I'd say profile them. Profile them.
Frisking is one thing, but body scans are another. And should we body scan everyone at the airports? I say yes. If it keeps me and my family safe, go ahead and invade their privacy. Those.
Hey, dumbass. Are you willing to get colon cancer from your body scan? Are you willing to get lung cancer? If you fly a lot, odds are your risk of that kind of stuff goes up dramatically. And you're willing to let that happen to your family? You know, there were, to use their phrase, flags. Here's a guy who bought a one-way plane ticket with cash and had no luggage. There's a flag, there's two flags, there's three flags. That's enough. And you don't have to pull him out of the line because he's a Muslim or a Semitic person or Levantine or whatever word you want to use. You pull him out of line because he's got suspicious, wait for it, behavior. It's the behavior, not the ethnicity. Jesus Christ. How hard is it? You get it. I get it. But the birthers and the deathers and the baggers and the... Oh, Jesus. They've gone completely insane. Absolutely around the daggum bend. Crazy. And they didn't care much for Arabic Semitic people in the first place, and this just gives them an excuse to make their lives a little more miserable, which in turn will engender just a little bit more frustration and revenge fantasies. And thanks, Fox. The plane you get blown up may be your own. You know, and of course, that guy who hasn't been in office for over a decade, Newt Gingrich, he wants some profiling, too. Well, that's fine. Can we profile for serial philanderers? Because, you know, Newt fits that behavior. And in Georgia, I do think it is still a crime, that adulterous behavior. Might ought to profile for the nudies in the world. Oh, but I'm just being silly. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Well, hey, Brian, how are you, buddy?
Hey, you know, I don't know how to say it in Scottish Gaelic, but in Irish Gaelic, I want to wish you Happy New Year. Aftabléon fewa my heist duet. To the Bobby Kincaid, lad.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Okay, and I'll go on from there, but The fact that I'm going back over this, what you were just talking about there with the Undie Bomber, is that going to be his name?
Yeah, he's the Undie Bomber.
Oh, my God.
You got to love it.
Is our country, even our news agency, our so-called news agency, the corporate news media, they're reduced to something where the literary quality of, say, that 1980 or so summer movie there starring Bill Murray, Meatball, that was the summer camp movie there.
Yeah.
That's more thoughtful than what they're using to describe how they reduce the...
Well, you want a great example of that, Brian?
Discussion on terrorism.
This isn't the terrorism story, but here's a great example of it.
Yeah.
The stupid Flush Flemball story with him in the hospital in Hawaii.
And now it could be a publicity stunt.
Well, it could be. It could well indeed be. But the fact of the matter is, we won't ever know one way or the other from the for-profit media journalism houses because they just read the press release on air.
Yeah. Disgusting. Yeah. And they couldn't put this... I'm going over the New York Times from today of a story, spy agencies failed to collate clues on terror. Mark Mazzetti and Eric Lipton's story. The National Security Agency 4 months ago intercepted conversations among leaders of al-Qaeda in Yemen discussing a plot to use a Nigerian man for a coming terrorist attack, but American spy agencies later failed to combine the intercepts with other information that might have disrupted last week's attempted airline bombing, end quote. But, and also, I got, there's some other information out there. The CIA had a lot more on this guy. They were tailing this guy, allegedly, and there was a lot going on there. But you mean to tell us that starting back to the it's into the multi-trillions of dollars, I would say, now that have been allocated, or at least the largesse has been given to the National Security Agency and to the CIA and the Office of the International, what is it, the Office of National Intelligence, the new director, a new bit of bureaucracy,
yeah.
Homeland Security, all of that, and the National Security Agency spying on your lawful citizens, yourself and myself, Bob, and 300 million Americans, in our emails, our phone conversations, et cetera, have been spied upon since going back to late January, early February 2001. George W. Bush, it was one of the first things that he wanted to have done. He was so paranoid about people, they wouldn't accept him. And nobody did, really, that was saying as president of the United States. But for 8 full months before September 11th attacks, they were spying illegally on Americans in total violation of the Fourth Amendment. And they've been able to ramp it up even further and further, and they still can't collate things together to catch this one.
Well, maybe if they weren't so wrapped up spying on us, Brian, they might catch some of these people. You know what I mean?
What did you just say?
I said maybe if they weren't so wrapped up spying on on us and getting, you know, old Aunt Rosalie's the 7-Up cake recipe down in the bowels of the Uniblab 10,000, they might catch some of these guys who are, you know, buying plane tickets one way with cash and not carrying luggage.
Or God rest his soul, back about 2004, 2005, Senator Edward Kennedy himself ended up on some terror watch list or something, or on a plane flight to go back to Boston from Washington. This is the, you know, this is, these people are, yeah, they want to make, even before September 11th, like I'm saying, 8 months before, we were already all suspect to George W. Bush and the incoming Bush regime. I don't think you should call it an administration. And the fact is, after September 11th, especially, after 19 foreign hijackers attacked us, namely from Saudi Arabia, our ostensible ally, 15 of them were from that nation, after that, 300 million Americans who share none of the religious beliefs and none of this nuttiness of Wahhabism, even there's a few Christian fundamentalists who could be, you could drop them in another time warp or whatever to have them born in Saudi Arabia, and they'd be the most virulent amongst the people beheading their fellow Saudi citizens in Saudi Arabia. But most of us are still not a fundamentalist country here. But yet at the same time, 300 million Americans become suspect after September 11th, after what 19 foreigners did to us. And this is totally illogical. This cannot stand. I mean, you can't keep calling us a republic, you know, and letting it, and keep letting this go on. This National Security Agency, that they couldn't connect the dots on this. And his own father's going to the American embassy. This wealthy Nigerian businessman, Alhaji Umaru Mutaub, had urgently sought help from American and Nigerian security officials when cell phone text messages from his son revealed that he was in Yemen and had become a fervent radical. And it just, they had the news, and they had the information that this man was traveling to America. They can nail it, poor Amy Goodman going across the Canadian border there because they think she's going to mess up the 2010 Olympics or something like that, going across into Canada, and because she wants to talk about fair trade instead of free trade instead of corporate slave labor.
Yes.
But Amy Goodman, they can nail, and some, you know, some liberal, you know, person on the, you know, opiner on the national television or radio or internet, they can nail somebody like that, but they can't nail someone who's showing all the signs of being suspected of wanting to do something bad, violent against America or American interest or Western interest or Christian interest, whatever you want to call it. And his own father's going to the American embassy and the Nigerian security officials as well to try to get something done to detain his own son so he doesn't get into worse trouble. And they don't listen. After all of this, after all of this investment, the National Security Agency, that James Bamford book, that goes back to late 2005, he let it out, but they have been spying on America, the National Security Agency, really, I guess, to be fair, that they've been doing it long before George W. Bush came into office. They were, you know, you summed it up too in that Houston plan. You had me look up there about the young man that for the Nixon administration there were, you know, to spy any peace groups, all those types of the FBI, the CIA as well, were illegally and unconstitutionally, criminally spying on, you know, anti-war people during the Vietnam War era, people that were just, you know, the thoughtful, the intellectuals in this nation state, the best and the brightest that hadn't been killed in the lies for that Vietnam War, the ones that realized it was wrong, like Daniel Ellsberg, a patriot who let out that information there. Now, the patriot named Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers, that those people are made into, you know, they're criminalized and their rights are taken away, and yet the policy that is really killing America's young continues, whether it's in South Vietnam from 65 through 73, or it's Afghanistan and Iraq today, or Yemen now tomorrow maybe. You know, this is... I'm your manic depressive schizophrenic caller, Brian, but this is really...
No, you've got Sane pretty well cornered tonight, Brian. I mean, I'm not... There's nothing loopy in anything that you're saying. I mean, my God in heaven. You know, I remember going back as we do this retro, you know, we're supposed to be ending the decade tonight and everything. Yeah. Of course, I disagree because I don't start counting with zero.
It's not really over yet until January 1st, 2011.
Right. Because I don't, do you start counting with zero? I don't start counting with zero. I don't say zero, one, two, three, one. But anyway, who the hell? But, you know, I remember way back sometime in this decade when a woman at an airport in the United States of America, Brian,
right,
was forced to drink her own breast milk.
Yeah, I remember that.
At a security checkpoint to prove that it was not terrorist liquid.
My God. I know.
And you're right about it. You said something, and it just sort of, and
even
no offense,
American,
it just sort of flew right past. But Brian,
American motherhood is not protected by the United States Constitution since G.W. Bush and that regime.
Right, because they may have terrorist hooters. I mean, what? You know, it just God Almighty. But the fact of the matter, you said something a minute ago, and it just sort of blew right past. You said this new layer of intelligence bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the official name of it. It's the National Security Clearinghouse or something like that. And these are the people who were supposed to collate all the material and get it right so that we didn't have the failure to communicate like we did with the Phoenix memo, you know, back in 2001.
Yeah.
You remember the Phoenix memo. That's the people who were FBI field agents in the Minnesota and so forth who wrote these memos saying, you know, we got these Arab and Saudi guys who are trying to, you know, fly planes and aren't interested in learning how to land them.
And all those threats were coming in from intelligence agencies all over the world and security officials all over the world and leaders all over the world to the Bush White House and the Bush administration, and they couldn't put that one plus one together regarding the FBI agents, what they were trying to summon. And that's what they did to that agent named O'Neill there. I forget the man's first name, that he died at the World Trade Center.
John O'Neill, yeah.
John O'Neill, yeah. And there's a great book on him by, I think it's Ed Weiss, about John O'Neill. The man who tried to warn America came out in 2003, 2004. But they turned him off completely when the Bush regime came in. Again, this was just like we've said before, many people have said before, the Clinton administration, outgoing security people, Sandy Berger, all the rest of them, they were warning the incoming Bush security people, you know, and like you were saying in one of your monologues a couple of days back, Bob, that they did keep Richard Clark on, but they just refused to give him any kind of cabinet-level voice or microphone to get to the president and to actually listen to the man. And this is, but at the same time, when they were going after the people that had done the cold bombing, the new American ambassador to Saudi Arabia early in 2001, she took O'Neill right off the case. She threw him out of Saudi Arabia, and the people on his staff, he was just fed up with it. He knew that America was not serious about fighting the Al-Qaeda bastards, and there was something he probably something even more suspicious to him, that he was much more in the know. That's the kind of thing we're dealing with, the corruption, some corrupt rich ambassador to Saudi Arabia gets to shut off all the investigation because the Bush crime family doesn't want to hurt the feelings of the Saudi royal family, or just whatever the Bush family thinks. You've got to realize they think well ahead in terms of profiteering from wars, profiteering from terrorism, profiteering from anything, from Katrina. There's some kind of a graveyard gate or some kind of some corrupt funeral homes and cemeteries down there in the southern part of the United States that are hitched up very closely to the Bush crime family, and they were the ones that were in charge of for the first few months at least of the official death toll from Katrina in that area, the Gulf states, and they were covering up a lot of numbers there too. They can't have this kind of influence. I don't know what to do about it, but they did shut off John O'Neill's investigation of Al-Qaeda.
Yes. Well, you don't. You're right, Brian. You don't know what to do about it, except you're doing it now. You are talking about it. You are being aware of it. You are sharing your awareness with other people. And in so doing, you're, like I said last night talking to Jude, we don't dare say anything that we do is insignificant or significant, because there is no way of defining what the significance of what we do will, what significance it will have. All we can do is do. Does that make sense? And you're doing it, so, you know, don't sell that short, Brian.
I had a story here. You're talking about there's not much news out there about this is going back December 30th. I know this is in China. It already is. Of course, New Year's, as far as the Western New Year's in China now, they're about 14 hours ahead of us at when you reach the Chinese coastline, I believe they have. But the Tibetan living Buddha, Prabhu Tesering, was in Rinpoche. I don't know whether that's his last name.
Yeah, that is his last name.
By Chinese authorities. He's a revered Tibetan living Buddha. And they said they found, the Chinese authorities said they found an imitation pistol and 100 rounds of ammunition. But this guy, his house...
Yeah, because a living Buddha is going to have those.
No, but even his living room, his entire house is open to his fellow Tibetans and Buddhists there. His lawyer said of this Tibetan living Buddha, Prabhu Tesering Rinpoche, he said that the living room of such a venerated monk is a public place with people coming and going every day. Someone could have put the weapons there. His wife has said she never seen them before when cleaning the house, end quote. And they said he's the fifth incarnation of a revered Buddhist teacher known as by the title of Barangma. He was identified as a reincarnation when he was 7 months old. And now 53 years of age, he did not formally become a monk until after the chaotic ultra-leftist cultural revolution in China from 66 to 76, when all Tibetan monasteries were closed. By the time he took religious orders, he was already married with two sons. So I guess to be a Dalai Lama or to be a revered Buddhist monk or living Buddha, you don't have to be a boy king, or you can't even have a wife and kids. I didn't know that.
No, Well, there's so much that we don't know. That, I mean, to be fair, but the fact that there's no, I was simply going to say that, you noted that his wife said, anybody could have put them there, including the Chinese secret police. I mean, that's what goes unstated in that. But of course, they would go out. They would probably kill her if she said that.
And you know, this man does look like that. He's got, like the Dalai Lama himself, he's living in India now still. I believe he's got that same peaceful, gentle smile on his face there, this man, Tesering Rinpoche. But also, that reminds me of a story, and tell us how we're all interrelated. Have you ever heard of the famous show from the 1950s, Sergeant Bilko, starring the comedian Phil Silver?
Oh, not only have I heard of it, I've seen it a million times.
Okay, that's what my father was in World War II. Like I said, he likes the way he could chew out his men. Phil Silvers was such a funny, his New York-y, streetwise type of guy. That was the way a lot of people in the Marine did it to me, and I'm sure it did it to my father. They could dress down a guy in their streetwise style there, but it was also a very funny show. But also, there's a famous travel writer in the 1980s named Paul Theroux, British travel writer. He wrote a book about China. This was before, you know, the June 1989, the Tiananmen Square atrocities. But this was before that. He traveled from the mid to late 80s, but before Tiananmen Square. he wrote a book called Ride the Iron Rooster about riding a rail line in China. Just, it was just burgeoning. It was just beginning to open up then, you know, from the 80s onward. And, he had a Phil Silvers Sergeant Bilko, t-shirt on with the big picture of Sergeant Bilko, Phil Silvers. He was walking around Tibet and all that. And he looks a lot like, with his glasses and all that, like the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
Phil Silvers does. And the Chinese authorities roll over this poor Paul Theroux guy. You know, to say, you know, well, you can't have the Dalai Lama like that. Are you trying to make some kind of counter-revolutionary anti-Chinese, you know, a Tibetan independence movement here or something? You know, that's what, when they saw Phil Silvers, they saw the Dalai Lama.
Well, you know, at this point, it's caused them so, the Dalai Lama has caused the Chinese communists so many problems that they probably see him everywhere they go. You know, it becomes a little bit like the lub-dub of Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart.
Okay, yeah. That's a haunting story, huh?
Yeah, and believe you me, the Dalai Lama haunts the people's the Chinese Communist Party every minute of every hour of every day. And you know, just in mentioning Tibet, Brian, you bring something to mind, and that is the fact that I don't think there is any better example on the face of the earth of what it has meant for the United States to abandon whatever high ground we controlled on human rights than Tibet. Because the fact of the matter is, we can see in the fact that we have to keep our mouths shut about Tibet, we can see what it meant when George Bush began torturing other human beings simply for being other human beings that he wasn't sure he liked or that weren't white enough to suit him.
Yeah.
You know, when we didn't take every step necessary, when the Supreme Court, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas and Scalia, struck down affirmative action, that had real-world consequences for people far beyond the scope of the United States. I'm thinking Tibet again. Because what it said was that the U.S. was not interested anymore in the most fundamental tenets of human decency and human rights. And since we abuse our own, we no longer have the ability to look at a situation like Tibet and look at the Chinese and say, what you are doing to the Chinese is, or to the Tibetans is wholly unacceptable. And the fact of the matter is, we'll stop trading with you. If you don't get square about Tibet.
That will only help our economy, too, if we have to start making our own products again. That would be, I'm all for.
And I don't know if you ran across this or not, but there was a humongous manifestation of how the Chinese are, to use the phrase, gaming the system, coming out of that little bit of accord that came from Copenhagen.
Yeah.
You may or may not have seen this, but in that last meeting at which...
That Barack Obama kind of interrupted a meeting of China and India, Brazil and... perhaps one other country there that he stopped them from, and he cajoled them into this.
But it's also the fact that Barack Obama's the president of the United States. He flew to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
The chief tyrant or dictator or whatever he is of China stayed home and sent some, you know, fourth level bureaucratic functionary in his stead.
Right.
All right. And so at that final meeting, Barack Obama is sitting there and the Chinese are very, very well attuned to, matters of insult and matters of honor and, you know, because they've got a culture that's a few thousand years old that's all steeped in that. So they knew what they were doing when they sent this file clerk to sit opposite the President of the United States. So
right.
Then for instance, a principal would be brought up. And the file clerk from the People's Republic of China would say, everything's got to stop. I have to go call my people. And so, you know,
tactics.
Yeah, Angela Merkel was absolutely incensed. Barack Obama was his unflappable self. But the fact of the matter was the People's Republic of China, in what they did, thumbed their noses at the rest of the world on climate change and basically squirreled any possibility of any sort of deal going forward.
And isn't it something that's striking the way you said that the fourth level lackey that the Chinese premier sent over to the Copenhagen meetings there, Bob? Isn't that much like, doesn't the Chinese dictatorship and totalitarian corporate communism, I would almost have to call it, and it is now, the Chinese government, doesn't it fit right in with the multinational corporations based in America and Europe, and they're kind of a take no prisoners and just, you know, have their bureaucracy as well, which is, it's polluted our government with its own kind of fascisms or Stalinism, whatever you want to call it, where the organization, the corporation is everything, but the individual people, whether it's a Chinese peasant or an American from Vermont or West Virginia, they're nothing compared to the corporation's rights.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we all learned coming out of Copenhagen who the rising superpower on this planet is. Here's a hint. It ain't us. We're on the decline.
And God love them. They can make some kind of better autonomy for themselves. But it's not the Tibetan people either. But they are part of, you know, I don't know what to, I don't think there is any solution to Tibet other than just, you know, like you were saying, if we had the power right now, people like ourselves, true progressive, true Americans, would shut off all trade with China until they improved the rights in Tibet, and until they, you know, they improved the rights of their own workers in China, and then we, just as well, if they tried to punish us or, you know, called in their loans, then so be it. America can get by that, and we can start building our own products again for our own selves, our own citizens, our own kids. Chinese toys almost killed some American kids late last Christmas season, I believe, as a matter of fact, anyways. The Chinese toys.
Oh, they've killed our dogs. They've poisoned our baby formula. The toys are toxic.
Yeah. Talk about Mother America, where we think we're a great ancient culture. We're nowhere near, like you're saying, as old as China or as Egypt or like a land that was historically called Mesopotamia, that's today's Iraq or Iran, Persia. That Alexander the Great himself dressed as a Persian, an Asiatic Persian prince, because he wanted to look civilized. He didn't want to look like a Macedonian.
And he incensed you know, his Macedonian troops in doing that.
Yeah, but he was like the real superpower of his time, in great culture of the time too, as well. In many ways, was Persia, was, you know, there's no doubt about it. In terms of real greatness of humanity, the rational classical Greek age. That's my, as if you're a real American, that's your ancestor. No matter whether you're Black American, Irish American, Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, the rational thinkers of the classical Greek age, who were greatly influenced by Southwest Asia and Chinese and Egyptian thoughts and sciences as well in their culture, including many Black Egyptian empires, they were. That's part of the Black Athena,
yes.
Great book on the history. But they were our true forebears, and we need to keep that going. And I know we need to try to get back to being light a little bit. We need to be like Socrates himself said, Bob. You know, Athens is like a great stallion, but we need to be like the horsefly. You know how a horsefly is, in Greece too, a horsefly can attract, a horse can, even if it's a stallion, can't outrun a horsefly. And there, those bites you can feel, and a horse can too. And that makes, we're like the horsefly that can make the great, the city-state of Athens or the nation-state of America today great again by chomping on its rear end and biting away and making it great again and realize what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a stallion. It's not supposed to be a quarter horse or, you know, it just out in the plow in a field. They need to do that. We need to keep that kind of a greatness in mind. We can get it back. But if it's not through this way, but this war on terrorism is nothing but flag waving, superficial nonsense, Bob. And it is
authoritarianism, Brian, yeah. At its most pernicious.
And I want to remind people that they think that this is just going to be another little additional operation. This nation of Yemen, I look on the Gulf of Aden where it is, and it's on the coast there. Djibouti on the African side, there is a little nation there. We've had troops there for years. And Somalia, Yemen has about 100,000 Somali refugees. Yemen is actually, people need to realize, it's about exactly the same geographical size as France. It's not a, you know, that Saudi Arabian Peninsula
is huge.
Maps can be misleading. It's a huge land area. And Yemen, too, just that small little, compared to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, it's a much larger country than you think, much more complicated. And you could never, if they want to raise any kind of separatist movement, whether it's Saudi Arabian troops or American troops, you know, that we'll never be able to totally, you know, install a quiet, peaceful regime there. It's just a, is just another, it's an Arabian Peninsula, it could be a stop along the same lines as Afghanistan. We've got to get beyond this militaristic, this is not it, it's only making more of these Nigerian bombers that we almost, God forbid, God love them, that the passengers, that they stopped this so-and-so that day. But we can't keep this up. We can't be so bellicose and thinking that the rest of the world does not agree with us that everywhere we have troops is spreading democracy. They believe it's spreading corporatism, or they're just being, like you're alluding to, we're just being corporate competitors of the Chinese giant. You know, that we're only there in Afghanistan to cut off the oil and gas pipelines from the Chinese and Russians. That's the only reason Barack Obama doesn't dare come out and say that. But I don't see any other logical reason, and it's not necessary to me. I believe there's other ways to the diplomacy. Dennis Kucinich's Department of Peace had been in place since 2004. We would have already won the against this alleged Al Qaeda, the war on terrorism, whatever you want to call it. We would have won over the vast, vast multitude of the Islamic people of the world and of the Third World. This is what we're doing now is the we're going in the opposite direction, and it's not the. We just, like I said, we just celebrated the Prince of Peace birthday, and we haven't really honored him in our practices very well. You know, that famous Nazarene lad.
Yes.
I'll let you go, though.
Brian, it's a wonderful conversation, yeah. And I wish you the very best in the coming new year.
Okay, I hope my hot air helped heat up your West Virginia home there. Also, in terms of Happy New Year in France, a large French-American population here in New Hampshire, Nouvelle Année, Harese. And for the Spanish speakers out there, Feliz Año Nuevo, for German, Gelukkige Nieuwjaar, or Dutch would be Gelukkig Nieuwjaar, for the new year. And that's what I could see. I struggled with these Pimsleur tapes on studying Irish Gaelic, Bob, but I'm still more, as much as we hate our parents sometimes, my mother and father, my paternal religion, my paternal language is Anglo-Saxon English.
No getting around it, I know.
Traces in the German and the Dutch, but not so much in the Romance languages, but they're beautiful. They're more beautiful languages to me. I don't know. And I hope I gave you the Hawaiian, right? Didn't I? Ahuali Mahakiki. Ahuali Mahakiki.
Far better even in the attempt than I might ever dream of, Brian.
Okay, and the best to you and yours, sir. Have a good night.
All right, take care. Bye now. Bye. From New Hampshire, that is our good friend, Brian. And, no, I don't have the nerve to even take a run at the Hawaiian for Happy New Year. I think the German, though, what he was saying was, Glücken Neues Jahr? I don't know. And what he said about Yemen, I hadn't given a lot of thought to, but lo and behold, I just went and fired up Google Earth. And, of course, Brian's right. The Arabian Peninsula is rather sizable. And you don't get a sense of it, really, until you actually mean to look at it. Yemen is no tiny country. It's not a little bit of nothing. Now, there, you know, being Arabian Peninsula, it's got a whole bunch of desert. But so what? That it's their desert, and we're running bombing raids there? You know, I'm sure some people, well, you know, Bob, you just don't understand national security. And, you know, it's the absolute truth. I don't understand national security the way these murderous goons do. I understand that national security flows out of national decency. Can we try that? And when we are indecent to other people are prone to be indecent to us. Wait, that sounds an awfully lot like something I have read somewhere. It just doesn't quite come to me, but, you know. And so if in fact we are bombing Yemen now and assisting our Saudi pals, then we can expect more trouble out of Yemen, and it will be, in short, a hell of our own making. One more for you, according to Texas Betsy, and I will take a run at this because she was kind enough to write it out with what looks like emphasis. In Hebrew, Lashana Tova. Close enough, Betsy? Please? Not a gold star or anything, but, you know, at least a C, maybe? Yeah, Tim, we are multicultural. We are so multicultural. And it's really cool. Because, you know, I do reflect on the fact that it has always been my dream to travel extensively. And I have to come to grips with the fact that I probably will not. I will not see the places that I see by going to Google Earth and looking at the photos that people have posted there. But I get the emails from all over the world. And I do get the sense that there are people out there who are willing to be my eyes and ears in the world. And it's a gorgeous thing. The photos, my God, I just opened up a photograph in Yemen that was simply captioned near Lodar. And it's a two-lane highway going switchback after switchback after switchback. If it had coal trucks on it, I would think it was a West Virginia mountain road. But it's a two-lane mountain road somewhere in Yemen. And great heavenly days, is it beautiful. And you couldn't stand there and not be moved. And we're going to bomb it someday, maybe? Or this sterling white Al-Muhdahar Mosque. Breathtaking. And, of course, more than worthy of being bombed. Because, remember, bombing faraway places, far more than my desire to ever see them, bombing faraway places is awfully good business. Or brick buildings of some six or seven stories with facades in white or the color of the natural brick itself or this sort of aquamarine blue tucked up against a barren hillside and a man riding a donkey past and the palm trees growing, and it's Wadi Dawan in Yemen. Suitable for bombing. Tough to stomach. I'm not kidding you. Mighty tough to stomach. And the stuff that Brian was talking about with regard to the diminution of our rights as American citizens, this is not going to sit well with you. Because, well, it's another one of those diminution, or another layer of opacity put atop what should be a transparent government. The Christian Science Monitor and their writer Warren Ritchie reporting the Federal Appeals Court, and this is from yesterday, a Federal Appeals Court in New York ruled yesterday that U.S. government agencies, pay close attention here, may refuse to confirm or deny the existence of records when faced with a Freedom of Information Act request that might disclose sensitive intelligence activities, sources, or methods. Well, I would say that a ruling like that sort of just flings the barn door open on miseries such as torture. Because, you know, just take those words and wallow them around inside your skull for a little bit. Let them rattle about between your ears. U.S. government agencies may refuse to confirm or deny the existence of records when faced with a Freedom of Information Act request that might disclose sensitive intelligence activities, sources, or methods. So, in other words, you have a reason to believe that some element of the United States government has engaged in some sort of nefarious conduct at, say, the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay. So you haul your happy little butt down to the federal courthouse and you file a Freedom of Information Act request. Well, according to the appeals court in New York, the federal government, the agency that you're FOIA-ing, can simply send you back a letter that says, we refuse to confirm or deny the existence of any such records as you are seeking. Which is sort of semi-fancy, semi-legalese for, dear sir or madam, we called Dick Cheney and he said for us to tell you to go F yourself. This is a ruling from the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the particular case involved a lawsuit that was looking for information about whether the U.S. conducted secret surveillance of lawyer communications with detainees at the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp. Lawyer-client privilege. As Jonathan Turley noted on one of the interview shows, consistency in the application of judicial process is the cornerstone of having a reliable judicial process. So much for that. Because one of the consistent cornerstones of our legal process is the fact that attorney-client privilege is something approaching sacrosanct. And now the Second U.S. Court of Appeals has said, screw all that. Screw 400 years of Anglo-American jurisprudence. Screw it. If we want to spy on a defense lawyer preparing his defense by communicating with his client, you know what? If you ask us if we did it, we're going to tell you that we can neither confirm it nor deny it. We're going to tell you to go Cheney yourself. Now, this was no little pissant lawsuit. The FOIA request was submitted in 2006. It was submitted by 23 individual lawyers who represent individuals who are held as terror suspects at the concentration camp in Guantanamo Bay. And they were looking for National Security Agency records as well as Justice Department records. What they were looking for were records, quote, obtained or relating to ongoing or completed warrantless electronic surveillance or physical searches regarding, referencing, or concerning those 23 lawyers who filed the request. All in the world the federal government need do, according to the Federal Appeals Court, the Second Circuit Court, all the federal government need do is say, we're sorry, answering your FOIA request would disclose sensitive intelligence activities, sources, or methods. We can neither confirm nor deny the existence of the material you seek. Now, this case was argued with the government defending against the FOIA request as filed by those 23 lawyers. The federal government defending was, of course, the United States Justice Department, or perhaps the Solicitor General. One isn't entirely sure. But here's the important part. Whose Justice Department? Whose Solicitor General office? Whose? The Obama administration. Basically, in flat-out agreement with the Bush administration's take on its own rotten, filthy, unconstitutional, fascist, dictatorial, semi-tyrannical conduct. Ron in Raleigh adds, Bob, isn't it time we started using an old phrase that's fallen out of favor, but seems to be apropos, the running dog lackeys of the imperialist corporatist state? Isn't this what we have become? I hate answering a question like that in the affirmative. But damned if it isn't hard not to. Because you see, rulings like that, and rulings by a sitting U.S. Circuit judge, namely Jose Cabranes, who writes, although the public is aware that the TSP exists, the government has found it necessary to keep undisclosed the details of the program's operations and scope. The fact that the public is aware of the program's existence does not mean that the public is entitled to have information regarding the operation of the program, its targets, the information it has yielded, or other highly sensitive national security information that the government has continued to classify. The NSA asserts that it cannot provide any more information without doing cognizable harm, and we agree. The government affidavit sufficiently established that nondisclosure is appropriate, perhaps essential, for reasons of national security and confidentiality. In other words, by simply pleading national security and some bogus level of BS confidentiality, the Constitution, the Freedom of Information Act, and 400 or 500 years of law on the sacrosanctity of attorney-client privilege can be chucked out with the evening's garbage. What was that phrase again? Running dog lackeys of the imperialist corporatist state. Congratulations, Judge Cabranes. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, did I interrupt anything important?
No, not at all.
Oh. Y'all having a party?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. I still can't get the show live, and so I had to.
But we have isolated the fact that that problem belongs to Verizon.
Yeah, it does. And I'm not sure how to get the link off of the White Rose into, you know, to make it into like an iPod or an MP3. I highlight.
Well, but you'd be forever and a day downloading it anyway because it's a bandwidth problem coming from Verizon.
Yeah, there you go. Well, anyway, that this will be a moot point after a few days. I'm just pretty much over my pneumonia, and I'm kind of getting my truck kind of packed and, you know, picking up loose ends and making last minute arrangements and stuff and getting out of here and heading east and heading toward the Big River. Going to stop in Texas City first and see what kind of cleanup they've done after the hurricanes and how far they haven't gotten. They still had piles of debris and on Bolivar Island when I left back there. I don't even know what year this is, but it'll be a moot point in a few minutes, right? I was wondering what do people eat for New Year's and why? It would just.
Well, you know, we try to cover all of our bases here.
Okay. Has anybody talked about black eyed? Why? You know, like why? What do people eat for ceremonial or ritual food for New Year's for good luck or what?
Well, growing up where I grew up, it was strictly black eyed peas with maybe some. Hog jowl or bacon for seasoning.
Right. Dead pig and black-eyed peas and cornbread.
Yeah, and up here roundabouts, it was always hog jowl.
And who eats sauerkraut and why?
Sauerkraut, I'm not so sure on.
No.
Now, you know, you get into the Irish community, it's corned beef and cabbage. Of course, I'll take any excuse on the planet for corned beef and cabbage.
Ooh, ick.
Oh, come now.
I don't like corned beef. Ooh, not at all.
Now, I'm not talking about that nasty stuff from Argentina in a can, Kate.
Oh. Yeah, I picked up a piece of ground beef the other day. Not the other day, when I was taking care of the lady next door. She wanted taco salads, and so I picked up a little roll of hamburger meat in Walmart, because that's where she liked to shop, or in our local Kroger's. And it said 100% beef. From Chile, Mexico, U.S., and Argentina.
Or Australia.
Oh, maybe Australia was on there, too.
I'm pretty sure it was, because my labels say that.
How'd they get all them damn cows in that?
Well, how could all them cows even communicate in all them different languages?
did it. Whatever. Well, I just wondered if that would start a thread of conversation, like, what do people eat for...
Well, I'm informed in the chat room, ELO says, we have pork and kraut on New Year's Day.
Oh, what?
So that maybe that's a German influence.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, I just wondered, and what if I had to, I realized today about noon, oh my God, it's New Year's Eve. And I went to the cupboard, and I never don't have black-eyed peas. I had just eaten a big bowl of black peas, black beans and rice, and was just kind of savoring them with some corn chips, and I thought, oh my God, it's New Year's. Well, I'll just go whip up a mess of peas. I didn't have any peas in the cupboard. I'd never have, have black-eyed peas, so I had to make a trip to the grocery to get my black-eyed peas.
Well, you may be too far west for it, but when it comes to canned black-eyed peas, I have to tell you that the best brand, and I don't think this is one of those cases where all the black-eyed peas come from one factory.
No.
Because these taste so radically different. The best brand is Glory.
Don't have them here.
Oh, man. It's a Southern company. And there's a recipe on the back of the Glory brand, I think it's Glory brand, black-eyed peas for Hoppin' John that works to a T.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Oh, my God, is it good. And so, you know, and so we sort of incorporated, you know, we have our black, like I said, I cover all bases. We do hog jowl, fry some hog jowl in the morning, but then we'll have our black-eyed peas in the form of Hoppin' John, we'll have some cornbread. And then we'll have corned beef and cabbage. So I think I've pretty well got it covered. But if I have to eat sauerkraut, too, that won't exactly break my back.
No, really. and I just wondered, why do we do that, and where does it come from? I know it was always, I was always told it was for good luck. And I thought, oh, hell, I don't need to go to the grocery store. I got to go put on clean jeans and get my shoes on. And, oh, man, and it's cold. And I thought, no, I don't even want to press that luck. And I thought, well, how? No, I'm not superstitious at all.
Not even a little bit. Okay, well, I'm seeking to answer your question here. And, of course, this comes from the Internet, so it can't possibly be wrong.
No, hello.
Let's see. The celebration of the New Year, they say, is the oldest of all holidays. Some form of New Year was observed in ancient Babylon about 4,000 years ago. That was the first new moon after the vernal equinox. See, I like that for a New Year's Day much better than in the middle of freezing your butt off late December, early January.
Yeah, yeah.
But, of course, you know,
I'd rather celebrate it on Jesus' birthday in March.
White European Christians, you know, they're bound to screw it up. Mm-hmm. The Romans did late March New Year's. Let me see if I can. Okay, no, I don't care about New Year's resolution. The baby, no. Food traditions. Many cultures believe that anything in the shape of a ring is good luck. God knows why. Many parts of the U.S. celebrate the New Year by consuming black-eyed peas. These legumes are typically accompanied by either hog jowl or ham. See? Black-eyed peas and other legumes have been considered good luck in many cultures. The hog, and thus its meat, is considered lucky because it symbolizes prosperity, eating high on the...
hog. Oh, okay.
Cabbage is another good luck vegetable consumed on New Year's Day by many. Cabbage leaves are also considered a sign of prosperity, being representative of paper currency. And rice is lucky food in some places, I guess, that just consider themselves lucky to have any rice.
Well, we're just about down to good luck, aren't we there, boy?
I'm covering the bases, I'm telling you.
We've got cabbage leaves for paper currency, which is about what our paper dollars are worth right now. And we're down to eating beans and rice for good luck, so we're just about that.
We are going to be some of the luckiest po-folks on earth.
No kidding.
Yeah, and you know, I think, Kate, that's probably where it all comes down. What?
I'm hoping.
The New Year's here, and we've still got food in the dead of winter?
Yeah.
We are some lucky sons of, you know.
It's not, this ain't real. I've got peas.
What, we've still got black-eyed peas? Lucky us, yeah. Let's eat.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm in a place where most of my food comes from Mexico, so... as soon as I leave here, it all goes, it's all kind of down south of 10 and south of 90, it comes from Mexico, too. So, whatever. I had a long talk with Prairie 2 from, you know, from Aloy's show the other day. And we got to talking, and we just went around and around and around in circles. I mean, it's just grim out here. It's just grim, and it's really kind of spooky. And he said, well, you know, some people still have jobs, and they still have money, and yeah, but how many, you know? I mean, and what kind of jobs, and where are they spending their money? Or whatever. I don't even want to get into that. Anyway, I had to, what happened with the video that David sent you? I mean, did she heal the baby? I mean, I lost the connection.
Oh, well, it was a fraud. It was a giant howling fraud.
But if the baby was comatose and she's standing there screaming in tongues at the baby, no wonder the baby came too.
But the baby wasn't comatose. The baby was drugged. I mean, I and you and likely many other members of the Horn family have been around a baby from time to time.
Yeah.
And a baby of that age has a profound sucking response.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the first motor response, really, that a baby develops, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Well, to see this video, and I'm not trying to be gross, all right, but the baby opens her eyes and opens her mouth and sticks her tongue out, and I mean, it's the baby's tongue can reach the bottom of its chin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's drug behavior, frankly.
Yeah. No motor control. Wow. Ooh, how gross. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered if the baby ever came too.
Oh, the baby did come too. It's just that. It was, I'm thinking, you know, a little dose of Benadryl and, you know, a little pinch on the butt and, you know, baby wakes up and, but the baby won't cry because the baby's still kind of drugged up, but, you know, it's a miracle.
Yeah, that talking in tongues thing was pretty scary. Oh, God, that's a frightening service to sit in when people are having fits in the aisle.
Well, and, you know, I fear that sometimes people think I'm kidding about the rolling in the floor and the strychnine drinking and, you know,
Oh, God, no. I've been in those church services that go on and on till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon when you think, oh, the colonel's chicken's going to be gone. You have to hurry up and get out of here, you know, or the country buffet, whatever it's going to be. It's all going to be dried up food if we don't get the hell out of here.
Well, like I've said on a number of occasions, when I was a boy growing up, there was a great competition between the Church of Christ, the Baptists, and the Methodists.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, we gauged the spiritual worth of our pastors on their ability to get us out of there in time to get us in line at Barber's cafeteria in front of the other two.
Yeah, right. Or in Texas, you got to get over to Furs before the. I mean, the Baptists are every damn where, but if you're in the right church, you can get to Furs before the Baptists do.
Oh, and Lord, my memories of that cafeteria, because it wasn't a part of a chain. And everything was fresh and everything was delightful. And for years and years and years, this is just one of those dull, stupid Bob things. I yearned after, their tartar sauce because it didn't taste like that gloppy, sweet, mayonnaise-y goo that you get in a jar from Kraft or whatever at the grocery store. This stuff was tangy and pickly and it had a wonderful consistency to it that was just simply untouched by that mayonnaise-y glop.
Yeah.
and of course, the cafeteria had long since shut down.
Mm.
But the funny thing was, when that cafeteria shut down, a bunch of the ladies who worked there went to work for the Morrison's cafeteria out in the mall.
Oh.
Which, of course, has since shut down, too. But they took all the recipes with them.
Wow.
So when you sat down at Morrison's, and got their fried fish and their tartar sauce. It was the same tartar sauce from Barber's cafeteria.
Wow.
And after much hunting high and low, the sister who no longer speaks to me, back when she did, found somebody who provided her the recipe for that tartar sauce, and she provided it to me.
Oh.
And I make it about twice a year.
That's that stuff you always rant about to me. You
know, yes.
Make the bit. Yeah, okay. I didn't know the backstory.
And it is, yeah. I may never go back to Florence, Alabama. But as long as I can make my Dick Howell's pool hall barbecue slaw and my barber's cafeteria tartar sauce and some Big Bob Gibson's barbecue, white barbecue sauce for chicken, they're over in Decatur, you know. It can be a little bit like home.
What's the name of that place in Tuscaloosa, the barbecue place?
Oh, Dreamland.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't like their sauce. It was too hot and too sweet or too, I don't know, it didn't, I was...
Oh, it's not sweet.
No, I mean, well, it was maybe too hot or too, I don't
know. Hot it is. It most assuredly is spicy.
And I didn't, I guess it wasn't hot, it was just spicy. It was the spices I didn't like, and I had my mouth all set for something like the Shed in Mississippi.
Oh, that sweet stuff?
Ocean Springs. I don't know. It was just, I bit into that first rib, and I went, ooh, Bob, where is
something wrong. Something wrong with you.
My friend from Poland didn't know the difference, though, so that's where he ordered, he ordered tea, and she asked him if he wanted it sweet, and he said, or she handed him a glass of tea, and he said, do you have hot tea? And she looked at him like he was a foreigner.
Which, of course. you want to hear something absolutely revolting?
Hmm.
On the way back today, we were driving past, not driving through, but driving past the local McDonald's. And there on a big sign, stop on in. Now we've got Mickey D's sweet tea for only a buck.
Oh, yeah, that's been going on for quite a while. Oh, yeah.
McDonald. Oh, God.
My friend in Ocean Springs, where I was living in Mississippi, she would stop at McDonald's and get the big tall sweet tea for $1.05 every morning on her way to work and then keep adding ice to it for the rest of the day. Yeah. Speaking of the baby, how's Margie today?
She is sore but resting comfortably. I checked in on her during the Green News Report break. I just popped out into the living room and said, "How you doing, honey?" "I'm okay. I'm okay, eh?"
Well,
you know, it's nothing through a straw for several days. No carbonated beverages, so she doesn't get her New Year's beer. That's a joke. Soft foods and thin soups and.
Yep. Been there. Oh, bless her heart. Well, anyway, I would just start a thread of conversation here and have people talk about what they do for New Year's food and why. And what would happen to them if they did? What happened to you when you didn't eat?
You starved.
No.
I think we've nailed it down, Kate. It's because all of these dishes are poor people's food. And if you didn't have this, you didn't have food. So having food on January 1st was lucky in itself.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I was talking about superstition or arguing with the goddess on what happened. Was there ever a time when you didn't eat your celebration food, and did you have bad luck that year? That's what I wanted to know.
I don't think there's ever been, and I'm not a creature of superstition, you know that, but I don't think there's ever been a New Year's when I didn't eat some black-eyed peas, some corned beef and cabbage, or some hog jowl, or all of the above.
My most memorable black-eyed peas were I was driving to Alaska, yes, on New Year's, because that's when the roads are frozen and that's the best time to drive, even though it's 85 below in White Horse, DuPont, but it was okay. Wind chill, I mean. I knew I was going to be on the road, so I had a can of black-eyed peas, and the heater hardly worked. I mean, the heater, it was so cold that you had to put your feet and your hands right by the heater in order to get any effect, you know. So anyway, and the brake fluid was kind of flushing up, and the tranny fluid is, you know, it's kind of only could only drive 45 miles an hour on that road anyway. But anyway, it was kind of hard to steer my truck, and you know, I knew where I was going to stop, and we found a motel and got a room, and had to leave the truck running.
because if you shut it off, it would be even the head bolt heaters and stuff. So I kept, I took the peas out from behind the seat and put them right by the heater on the floor and tried to get the chill off the can, and then that didn't hardly work. And so got into the motel room and drew a sink full of hot water and put the can in the hot water and changed the water up for about, you know, like 30 minutes to keep the, to heat up the peas. And I was so tired from driving all day in the cold that I just whipped out my little P-38 on my keychain and opened up the peas and ate them with a spoon. And the fellow I was traveling with was looking at me. He's, what the hell are you doing? And I said, just eating my black-eyed peas. What for? I said, because I don't dare not eat them. And the other odd place that I ate black-eyed peas was on the ferry going across from Dover to Calais.
Oh, wow.
And I had the peas with me. Yeah, I got them through, customs and through x-rays. They look like a little bomb, but that was before we had bombs, you know. And I always like to eat some kind of fish, like oysters or something with them. And, so I laid on the floor. It was the only time to take a nap. So I had some, a baguette, and I opened my peas and ate them out of the can cold with the baguette and a little can of oysters and a cup of hot tea from the buffet on the ferry. And when we got over to Calais, I put all my stuff in the rubbish bin and got off of the boat.
That sounds like some fine eating. And you know what? I imagine oysters of any sort would go well with black-eyed peas.
They do. I got a little flat, a little tin of oysters this afternoon, so I got my whole...
Oh, Agnes loves those little tins of smoked oysters.
I got my whole little thing. I got to make a pan of cornbread, but I got my whole little meal for about $3.98 today. So, yeah, you're right. If we didn't have food on New Year's, we'd be in deep yogurt, so... Speaking of which, anyway, I don't want to take up any more time. I want people to call in and say, hey, and what are they eating for New Year's? That's just a curiosity of mine. Cultural anthropologist that I am.
Well, we will see if we can get people to cooperate.
All right.
And I'm informed in the chat room, by the way, you were asking about various traditions. Tim, whom you may have heard earlier, said the Japanese New Year dishes, kobumaki, namely kelp rolls, kurumame, simmered black beans, and datemaki, rolled sweet omelet. And, oh, God. Yummy.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So it's sort of the same, you know, leafy things, kelp and oysters and omelet would be with egg, right? But, and peas, some kind of legumes. That's, you know, it's kind of a universal thing, like religion. Anyway.
Yeah, but I think dining makes more sense.
What?
That's what, you know. Oh,
dining, right.
as your universals go, the dining makes more sense. And Texas Betsy also informed me in the chat room that during the Jewish New Year, which is the first moon after the fall harvest, different time of year entirely, and makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you finished all your year's agricultural work, and boom. Time to eat, New Year. And they have apples and honey to ensure a sweet New Year.
Ooh, that's nice. I didn't know that.
I like that a lot.
I do, too. Maybe, yeah, all right.
Now if I could just find a culture that has Rotel Velveeta dip on New Year's, I'll be set.
I used my last can of Rotel when I got home this year. I think I did. Oh, maybe I didn't. Maybe I should mix the black-eyed peas. Anyway, I got an opportunity. I'm heading back east and get to eat some real food now. So.
Yeah, you'll get back to where the humans eat.
Mm-hmm. Or where they eat human food, you know, whatever. So, anyway, Happy New Year, and I'll talk to you all a little bit later.
All right, and when you get on the road, stay safe. By the way, you've got an invite to come visit Texas Betsy as you're passing through Texas. She's in Austin, you know.
What part of Texas, Betsy? What part of Texas, Betsy?
She's in Austin.
Oh, well, I'm heading down to Texas City, so maybe I'll, that's a considerate, Betsy, I'll be in touch with you in the next few days, okay? Thanks for the invite. That's very cool. Could just pick up horn listeners all the way across country, huh?
There you go. You are our little ambassador without portfolio.
Well, I
don't know what you did with the portfolio. It's not like we didn't give you one. Probably threw it in the rubbish. Probably threw it in the rubbish in Calais.
I have a huge job to do. I'm probably biting off more than I can chew. But I found out that HUD and FEMA turned 2,400 clients over to agencies in Mississippi and to different places. And I, of course, work for the Protection and Advocacy Agency and out of Jackson in the Pascagoula office, and we work with the elderly and the disabled, and every state has a P&A office. And I said, well, how many clients did you get out of the 2,400? And she said, none, because everybody's hanging on to them, because if they start getting rid of their clients, they'll have to downsize their agency. And then I talked to her again, and she said, well, we got three, but one of them was dead. They hang on to them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they hang on to them long enough until they die, and then you can, you don't have to work with them. And some of the more vulnerable clients are being put into institutions. I freak out. And JR said, well, they say that. Well, that they liked it. That's where they wanted to be. And she said, oh, shit, that's not true. And so I want to find out what was going on, and I want to find out what kind of mess is happening after Hurricane Rita and Gustav in Texas, because that was such a mess that they still had piles and piles of debris in the street.
Yeah, that was the one that hit South Padre Island, and the only thing left standing was the gay bar, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's.
It was the only working phone and the only standing building.
That was last year?
Yeah.
The Gustav?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, well. Well, anyway, I wanted to go and just go pick up as much information as I can, because the only way this can be kept out in the public space is just to keep talking about it on the horn and on Malloy, because it's, two of the workers from Mississippi were up at a conference in Colorado, and somebody asked them what they were doing, who are you, and they told them, what do you do, and they said, we work with Hurricane Katrina survivors. In Mississippi? There was a Hurricane Katrina hit Mississippi?
Oh, Jesus.
I thought that was just New Orleans. Oh, God. Okay, this was just last.
Yeah, it was a laser beam hurricane.
Hmm?
It was a hurricane laser beam. Just hit New Orleans. That's it.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, you've gotten the first answer to your question.
Hmm.
Ron and Raleigh just wrote in to say, the lyrics of that old blues tune come to mind. Give me a pig's foot and a bottle of beer. Ron says, nothing like some spicy trotters with vinegar and Hoppin' John.
Oh, man, I love pickled pig's feet. Damn, oh, my God, I love them. But I only eat them in private because it grosses everybody out. And I
wouldn't gross out Ron. wouldn't put me off my trotter. Fur could crawl across ground glass for a jar of pickled pig's feet.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, my God, I love them. And, yeah, I'd get them all over my face and dip down my arms and suck the bones and chew the ones that were soft enough. And oh, my God. Thank you, Ron.
There you go. Oh, that was, by the way, that was Galveston was where the gay bar was last thing standing.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't up to Padre. Anyway, I just am going to kind of do a little reporting from across the country and take some pictures and do, I don't know what good it's going to do, but I just want to keep talking about how bad it is, because it's very bad. It's still very, very, very bad. And now they're just letting the old folks die, or they're putting them in nursing homes, and we shouldn't be doing that.
Nope. You know, Ferg asked me to watch a film the other night. He wanted me to watch The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And that whole thing, the present tense part of that, all takes place in a hospital room in New Orleans as a woman lays dying with Katrina approaching. And so, yeah.
Oh.
Interesting film.
Yeah, that happened a lot.
Because, among other things, Brad Pitt has become most enamored of the Mississippi and Louisiana Gulf Coast.
I have too many things to say about that, so I'm going to hang up, and then none of them are pleasant.
So. I understand. I understand.
He built some interesting houses and then left. Took his money and left, so...
Yeah, we know all about that took their money and left part up here in the hills, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So I've eaten up another 5 or 6 minutes, and I just wanted other people to call in. So I'll be talking to you later.
All right.
Have a happy new year.
And you, too. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. I wait all night for calls like these. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hey, Bob, it's Renee Louise.
Well, hey, Renee Louise. How are you, dear?
I'm okay. How about you?
Cruising toward midnight.
Yeah, right. I just called because I wanted to. Well, first, I heard you talking about Margie just now, too, and I wanted to say I had all four of mine taken out. And if she just keeps them, I kept ice on them every half hour, you know, on and off with the ice packs, and that's
right.
Great.
That's been part of it, but there's also a little better living through chemistry going on, too.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even use painkillers or anything. I did really well with the ice. And within 24 hours, I had no swelling. And I had all four taken out, and it was major. They were, like, bulging out of the side of my...
Yeah, these hadn't erupted yet, so that made life a little bit better. And for the first time, and I was quite shocked by this, Renee Louise, they sent us home with her teeth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I told her on the way home, I said, you put... you put one of these under your pillow every night, and the tooth fairy will bring you a thing of pudding.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's wonderful. They didn't give me mine. Oh, gosh. And I was like...
No, I was kind of blown away. This is the second daughter we've had to who's had her wisdom teeth, you know, excised.
Okay.
And they certainly didn't do that with the first one.
No, I was her age. I wasn't that long ago that I had them done. I was around her, Margie's age when I had mine done, too. And I just remember the gaping holes, too. But they were so much better than having the teeth there because my mouth was too small. And they were just like, I would put my head down against my cheek. And I could feel the, against the pillow, and I could feel the tooth, you know.
Yeah.
Leaning into my jaw. So it was, if that's the right way to describe it, but... Yeah, but I tell you, if she does, I don't know, I found with the ice, if she keeps that, she should do really, really well, from my experience.
Well, and we learned an interesting little trick, Renee Louise. For ice packs, you know, you can go buy the artificial ice packs that are, creepy expensive, or you can use actual ice that gets all wet and sloppy all over your furniture or your pillow or whatever.
That's what I use.
Or you can do this. You can buy a couple of bags, you know, for like 98 cents. You can buy a couple of bags of frozen peas.
Yes, I've heard that. I actually have used that since that episode. I actually have done that. I didn't use string beans. But, yeah, peas, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And they stay frozen for a while, then you throw them back in the freezer and you pull the other one out.
Yep, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely, and it works really well.
Now, here's the hint. You don't cook them after. Because after they've been thawed and refrozen and thawed and refrozen a few times.
Oh, yeah. No. I usually have thrown them back in before they've defrosted too far. I don't use it that often. But then I also usually, it's my dog that gets the peas anyway. I make his, right now with the health stuff, I have to peas are too starchy, so I don't get those. But you're right. You can't eat them once they're defrosted.
Yeah, because they turn into real blech.
Yeah, they get freezer burn or whatnot.
Right.
And I also wanted to thank you. But anyway, all my thoughts are with her, of course. I'm also, how is Sue doing? From the last I heard, I'm like touch and go on being able to keep up with you guys. And I usually get you on the archive because out here it's 3 o'clock when
Sue is healing slowly. She would like to be healing more quickly.
Yeah.
But she is healing. There are some issues, but. With any good fortune at all, it'll all be cleared up and taken care of, and she will be up and highly ambulatory by the time July rolls around when we go to Netroots Nation in Las Vegas, because
That's exciting. I'd love to do that with you.
Oh, it's going to be a hoot. Sue has absolutely vowed she's going to be part of the Horn team out there.
Well, she's got so much incentive there, and I'm going to keep my thoughts. They're all the Horn families with me always, even though you might not hear from me. You're all right. You are my family. You know, I actually spent my Christmas listening to your Christmas Eve show, and I wanted to thank you for that because it was beautiful.
It was so beautiful.
And I loved it. It just brought such a smile to my heart. And I had to call and thank you for that as well, besides checking in on Sue and Margie.
Well, it will tickle Margie, Ferg, and Doodle just to pieces to hear you say that.
Oh, yeah. I had some little time here, and I was like, I've got to jump on while I have a chance because it's so rare lately. And I do. I miss you guys so much, you know. And everything you talk about, when I do start listening to you, it's like when I do get a chance to listen to you, I just, Bob, I'm so tired of the killing. I'm tired of the choosing of ignorance. And I don't mean to bring it down here, but...
No. It's a perfectly appropriate conversation for the end of a particular cultural year.
Yeah, and you know, though the thing is, it's how about the end of a... We just keep doing the same thing, Bob. Life doesn't have to be this difficult. It should not have to be. And it is not... You don't need anybody to tell you that hurting another is not the right choice.
Well, sure. And that's, you know, I was alluding to that a little bit ago, Renee Louise.
Look,
we're bombing Yemen. And so we're going to look up with this horror-stricken, amazed look on her going... Yeah. Why do the Yemenis hate us? Why do they want to bomb our airplanes?
That's what I mean. It's chosen ignorance. We're only doing it to keep money and keep this military thing going and keep power. And I understand, what's so terrible for me is that I understand the allowing of our humanists to consume, the majority of people allowing their humanists to consume themselves. I believe in the human and the spirit, that they come together in this human experience. The human thing for me is the ego or the soul. But, you know, we've been doing this for how many? Humanity has been doing the same thing for how long? And don't we see yet that it's not, that isn't the best for us? It isn't what moves us forward. It isn't what lightens us, raises us, which is what we're really looking for, that inner peace. That inner peace comes when you turn a kind hand, a smile to another. What you can do with a person when you smile at them, I have seen that in such a profound way when I was back in Manhattan. I was working in Manhattan. I was bustling along in the middle of rush hour, and I'm trying to, there's another social concept I don't believe in, time. You know, I'm rushing to get to work on time. And I saw this man, and all my friends would always warn me, don't ever smile at anybody on the street or whatnot. And I'd be like, ugh. And so I looked up, and I saw this man, and he was very happy. And I just, like, smiled and kept on going on my way. And the next thing I know, I started hearing, hey, hey, hey. I was like, part of me was like, uh-oh, they were right, you know. And the other part of me was like, I just kept going, and I just waited to see what was going to happen. And sure enough, he came up alongside of me, and it was the man I smiled at. And he said to me, you just turned the world around for me. And I stopped, and I looked at him. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I was kind of like, and he goes, your smile just made me realize it's going to be okay. And that there, you know, just hit me so profoundly. And everything that I believe in, how we do touch each other 3,000 miles away, a million miles away, we touch each other. We're so connected. And what we can accomplish by just with kindness. There's no reason for war. You know, we don't need any of this. This mayhem that we create. We create all this illusion around us. We're the ones who are creating all of this. We are the ones at fault for this. You know, we are the ones who are responsible for the reality we are living. Even those of us who are, like myself, who do not condone and do everything to stand against war that we can, we are still part of it. You know? And we still have some degree of responsibility in it. And it just, I just hope. And on the other hand, I do have hope, and I do see the glimmers that pop up here and there and keep me going. and keep me standing firm and looking to others to stand firm, and you can't give up. We have to keep going because we keep knocking the niche in that cycle. But I have to thank you again because here I can go ahead and turn to you and vent it, and you get it. You know, you, I...
Yeah, and you know, Renee Louise, we know what we're up against.
Yeah.
And, you know, our buddy Reverbo has repeatedly talked about the Bozo explosions going on all over the place. And I have an email thread here that I really haven't shared with anyone just because it was one of those annoying things that most of us see sometime or another, you know, where you get some piece of right-wing hate that you neither solicited nor desired, and yet at the same time you're morally moved to oppose it. And yet you also realize that you're, you know, pushing a rock uphill because it's an act of futility.
And yet at the same time, I know it's like you have that there, and there's some lines that just perhaps can never. I hate saying never, but cannot be changed. Let's say, but yet that's where we have to have the patience comes in, and the tide is turning. It's nowhere nearly as quick. Enough for me.
Right. Well, I want to share something with you, if I may, that comes from...
I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. I was just going to share this with you because it speaks to what you're speaking to, and this is one of the responses on this thread that had to do with a thing from Ben Stein about, you know, I'm Jewish, but I'm not offended by people telling me Merry Christmas. You know, just right-wing trash.
Yeah.
But one of the people, one of the normal people responding on this thread... said this, and I thought it was rather profound, and it goes in line, it works in line with something, with what Reverbo said. And this individual said, you and my brother-in-law seem to represent the people claiming to be the religious right and faithful Fox Not News fanatics and lovers of the two most moronic political figures I've ever run across, W. and Palin. It truly amazes me that you all get as far as you do. But as we know from biology, nature does not always favor the smartest. Those species or members of a species that can get their gangs together, religions, and make lots of babies flood the gene pool with those sets of genes which are generally disposed to have lots of babies and rely on religion instead of science and reason. Research shows that nations with the highest education rates generally have the lowest birth rates. Lower education correlates with higher birth rates. And so he concludes, it doesn't take a genius to see that in fairly short order, the dumb religious zealot genes will overwhelm the intelligent, quietly spiritual genes. Thus, the world is pretty much designed and destined to keep cycling back to stupidity and reliance on religion and superstition to soothe one's fears. And as the stupid people, those with no understanding of carrying capacity and the intelligence to practice family planning, see China's two-child policy, overpopulate the earth, wars inevitably result because of squabbles for scarce resources. And hey, the streets will run chest deep in blood, and you and yours can sway in the delirious ecstasy of Armageddon and the rapture, just the way you always imagined it. So rejoice. You're having fun, and your goofy outlook on life will most likely prevail over science and reason. Never underestimate the power of small minds in large numbers.
And you know something, Bob? Great. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, and the thing is, though, I've got to tell you, it's this whole genes thing, too. I'm sorry. Again, it's chosen ignorance. Because, all right, I've mentioned it to you before about my dad having been an alcoholic, and if you go with all the science and everything else or whatever, you could say that that's where the road I should have gone down. I've never done a drug. I'm not patting myself on the back here. I've never done drugs. I've never drank, okay? I've come, and thank goodness I've had the awareness to listen to the silence and to go there and use that and the guidance that I've gotten through there. And that all of us are capable of that. Each one of us is capable of that. Each one of us is a master. All right? If you believe in Jesus or Buddha or whoever, that they walk the earth, well, you are the same. You just have to stop and listen, quiet the chatter of your mind and the outside world, and it's there. The answers, the truth is there. And that's why, on one hand, I understand it. I understand what's going on completely. But on the other hand, there's moments where I just want to scream, stop it. I am so tired of the killing. I'm so tired of the degrees of killing that we inflict on each other. Whether it's the mountaintop removal and the slow death of my brethren out there in Virginia, West Virginia, and all over, you know, it doesn't matter. Whether it's the kid was talking about with my brethren out there who are victims of Katrina. Whether it's how we walk down the street and do something nasty to somebody else because of our own stuff that we're carrying around. Each bit of that is a killing of a, whether it's a physical slow killing or whether it's a killing of somebody's spirit or soul. Hitler didn't come out of the womb as Hitler. Look at the life he went through as a kid. And I'm not condoning what he did. But we have to stop being so ready to condemn and instead look at the why of it. And that's what drives me nuts, is that we do not step up and look at the why of it and take responsibility for the why of it. The why of it is this reality that we've created, this illusion. And this everything that we've bought into, which isn't the real truth. This is who we really are. If you quiet the chatter of your mind in the outside world, you find out who you are so easily. And the oneness, I mean, and the slow killing of not only our humanity, because we will kill, we will be our death, our fellow, our death will come to our own hands. But also our feathered, our furred brethren, our Mother Earth, the killing that we do there, and how arrogant we are about it, and how unconscious we are about it. But then again, that's why I cherish you. And then again, I have wonderful moments, such as the other night when I was walking down my street, and moments of accomplishment where I'm walking down my street, I turned to my neighbor, I said, I love your Christmas lights. And I said, and they're different. And she goes, yes, they're LED. You know about coal, right? And I was like, oh my God. I would have like ready to burst. I was like, oh my God. And she started, and I was like, oh, I'm so glad you know about that. Yes, the death of our mountains, isn't it? She goes, huh? I go, mountaintop removal. Oh, my gosh, you just touched such chord in my heart. And off we went. And she's like, you know what? I was going to put in pamphlet in all of our neighbors' boxes about these LED lights and how they save on energy and how it's about the coal. And I said, well, then why haven't you done it? And she went off, and she did it, Bob.
Oh, wonderful.
Yep, and I was like, oh, I got to tell Bob this. Because, you know something? I have not heard from one of my three senators there that I handwritten that letter for you to go and deliver. I've not heard from one of them about that. I've heard from the email response stuff, but not one of them has written back to me on that.
Well, they were all three hand-delivered.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure of it, but not one of them has written back. And, I mean, I had Barbara Boxer even did not write back. And she's on the about, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing. I was really annoyed by that, too. And that's why I'm so fed up with Washington. But then again, that's we the people. The preamble of the Constitution. We the people do ordain and establish this Constitution. All right? And I'm not letting Obama off. You know I've never been on the bandwagon with him.
No, I know.
And he has not taken... I won't even start going there. He has so much he could be doing. And we shouldn't be having to wait for him to have us hold his feet to the fire. Yes, we the people need to do more. But we should not have to be expected for those people who we put in office to represent us. We should not have to be working this hard to make them be doing what they're supposed to be doing. But it's been going on for way too long now. And now we have to do the hard, dirty work of getting rid of them. In order to turn it around, because and saying, you know what, I'm not fine. We can have a Palin McCain in our face. Well, we've got a big decision to make, you know, whether we keep this cycle going or whether we break it. And it's not easy. It's not an easy decision. But I'm so afraid, and believe me, along with you and I and others out there, we know we are suffering the real depth of that pain that others have not been hit by yet. And but I'm afraid it's going to have to get that bad or even worse in order for us to step up, which really infuriates me too, because there's
Well, that's somewhere that I sometimes go to, Renee Louise, because I sometimes wonder the only, I sometimes think that the only way of showing the so-called religious right the error of their ways is to give them exactly what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and just wait until they've got prayer in classrooms, but the prayer that they have, just wait and see how the Church of Christers and the Southern Baptists respond when the prayer that they get in classrooms is some portion of the Roman Catholic Catechism.
Yeah. Yeah,
because they will.
I was brought up on that, so I know.
Right, and they will turn purple.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they'll want their separation of church and state.
Yeah, and I know, and yet at the same time, and I so there with, and then at the other, on the other end, it's just, and yet I get so infuriated that this doesn't have to happen. You know, it doesn't have to go to this extent. It doesn't even need to be where it is.
Well, you know, I'm not going to insult you or anyone else by saying to resolve whatever for the coming year, because there is no want of resolve on any of our parts.
Oh, I know.
So all I can say is keep doing what you're doing. Keep having those little conversations about LED Christmas lights, Renee Louise.
Oh,
and you know what?
You
will see the world change before your very eyes.
That's how it's going. I know. See, that's just it. I know that's the way it has to. I know that's the way it has to go.
But unfortunately, I have to bring things to a close because we are at the end of things. But
I
it is so. No. Don't apologize. I'm so glad that the last conversation was with you this evening and this year. And I certainly hope we will hear more from you as we go into 2010. And just be well. And know that the love and camaraderie and collegiality that you share toward the Horn family is shared back at you in equal measure, pressed down and shaken together.
Oh, thank you, because I so need that, because as with you, I'm very solitary and of my own choosing, but to find people like you, you are my gold and diamonds, and thank you for giving that to me and for saying that, and it really goes so deep within my heart, you just don't know. And, again, thank you for the Christmas Eve show again. And I hope you got what I sent for Ferg about Helen Keller.
Yes.
I hope you did. Okay, good. And the only other thing, if I can say quickly, too, is please, I haven't gotten a chance to go into the chat room, but letting ELO, well, hopefully she's listening, ELO know that I'm thinking of her and continually, and she's getting those healing thoughts sent to her.
Well, she is hearing it because she is right there in the room.
Oh, great. I know she's going to be there with you. And you know, if we had high speed rail, I'd be there with you right now.
I know the fit, and keep working. All we can do is keep working.
Yeah, but I better let you go.
Take care, Renee Louise, and a very happy and prosperous new year to you.
You too. Love the whole gang, okay?
All right. Bye now.
Take care.
And so we come to the end of this Christmas time machine, this New Year's Eve edition of The Horn. No show tomorrow night. I will be camped out in front of a television enjoying what can only be described as an absolute orgy of college football. But Monday night, we're right back here just like any other night. Thank you. As we wind down the year, thank you to all of you who have made this year possible. Thank you for your financial contributions, the sacrifices you have made to keep Conversation Radio going. I can never fully express exactly what the depth of gratitude and the depth of respect and the depth of admiration and, yes, of love for your willingness to see this continue. Thank you. Thank you for the ideas. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for sharing your time with us. Because of all the things you do give, the time that you give is the most precious and the most scarce and the most finite. And that you share it with us is the greatest gift that anyone sitting behind a microphone could ever receive. So a very happy New Year to you all. Thanks, always thanks, to ELO, to Lottie, to our blogger Texas Betsy, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, for whom the new year has already dawned, and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you've got a little time over the weekend, remind yourself of exactly what the White Rose Society was and what it stands for and stood for and what it means and what that very name honors. Thanks for a year, another year of support from Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. May 2010 be the year that we see, finally, wind turbines on Coal River Mountain. And for Magnus?
Happy New Year and lots of love from our family to yours.
And from me, the same. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, Happy New Year! You just know where this one's going to start, don't you? How can it not? Late last night, after the show was over, I received emails from Chris and Sandra alerting me to a little something-something that was going on in the universe. On the one hand, Chris said, "Well, Bob, if you haven't seen the headlines yet, Rush is in the hospital." Now, I don't like to wish ill upon anyone. And see, this is the way it goes if you're talking about Rush. You start out by saying, you know, I don't want to say anything rotten. And then the disjunctive portion of the language kicks in and you go, but! And just as I did, Chris said, now, I don't want to wish ill upon anyone, but with all the bashing that he's been doing on Obama and the Democrats over this health care bill, I'm just curious as to the kind of treatment that he's getting. Oh, wait, that's right. He's a multimillionaire. He doesn't have to worry about quality of care and coverage like you, myself, and so many other Americans. Maybe while he's in the hospital, he can take the time to see all the people in the waiting emergency room waiting to get treated, or the ones that get turned away. Yeah, I understand, Chris. And a Happy New Year to you. And in addition to that, Sandra sent me an email, slugged the subject line, Dare to Dream. Bob, what a wonderful way to end the year. Shall we pray? And there it was, all over the series of tubes. You know, it's a series of tubes. It's not a big truck. Somewhere along the way in his Hawaiian vacation, and Joe Vecchio, when I...